Hey, sorry about that.
How are you doing?
Good. Usually I have a mad dash about 5 minutes before we start in order to unplug my secondary monitor, dial the fans back on the iMac, unplug all the external drives, all the silence. And this time I didn't have to do any of that because I've got the nice Mac Pro that's making no noise at all. But then literally 10 minutes before we began, my dad rang, upload a video to YouTube from Final Cut Pro, and I had to spend what was actually quite an excruciating time of me sat on my AirPods, never having used Final Cut Pro, trying to get him to export a file to his desktop and just upload it manually. Difficult.
Yes.
Yeah, very, very difficult.
Technical support, family calls.
Yeah.
Always fun.
I have to say, much better with the AirPods, though, because I was able to make a cup of tea and to sort out some other stuff at the same time, because I just had the AirPods in, just walking around the house without having to carry my phone around or worry about connection issues. AirPods are a pro for dealing with those issues.
AirPods are good. I was using them today. I forgot I had to take my kids to school today, so I forgot that, and then I also forgot a call that was supposed to be at 9 o'clock, which I hadn't, to be fair, I hadn't had the invite for. It got stuck in the guy's outbox. So I was literally dropping the kids off and suddenly this thing comes up, you know, sorry, this was stuck in the outbox, we're ready to go. And I'm like, great. So AirPod, you know, one AirPod went in and I just managed to dial into this call, which then, you know, even though it's fairly noticeable when it's on your face, if you can't see, you know, if you can't see that side of your face, you've got no clue. So you get those strange looks from people as you're walking along having a conversation and they're thinking, are you talking to, you know, hello, are you talking to them? But yeah, brilliant. Love them.
Definitely the best thing that Apple's come in a long while.
Yeah, I mean, the Beats are pretty good. The Beats X are pretty good as well. I mean, they're more cumbersome. You know, I prefer to sort of wear them on when I go for a walk or whatever. When I go for a run, I mean, I'm a bit extravagant with the head. The Power Beats 3 are my running ones, which are in my running jacket for the morning. So, and this is mainly because I'll always, you know, lose them, put them somewhere. I've lost AirPods already. So I have those in the jacket pocket.
I love that you lost AirPods in their case, though.
Yeah, the whole lot. Yeah,
one didn't drop out while you were doing.
No,
you just mislaid them.
Yep, no messing around, just gone. So I've got those for the morning, so I know where they are. Then I've got a pair of Beats X on my desk, so I, you know, when I get in, I've got those there. So they're at hand basically, and then the AirPods pretty much stay in my pocket, so they're always with me. But the Beats X are pretty cool. So we had an incident with the call, a couple of calls back or whatever it was, where my batteries were running out and I was trying to badly sort that out on the headphones while on the call, which, you know, no one noticed. But resulted in our call recording being about 90 different files, which was nice. So what I did is I just checked that because they weren't plugged in to charge. They were at 33%, which should be fine. You know, could easily last a couple of hours or more. But I had 20 minutes, so I just plugged them onto the charger. And they were like up to like 87% by the time, like 10 minutes later. So it's pretty neat, you know. Nice little charge and 87%. So, they're good. The only thing I don't like about them is, I would prefer to be more like the AirPods where you take them out your ear, they go into standby or something, or, you know.
Yeah.
They don't do that. That's the only thing.
I was in the Apple Store. I've been in the Apple Store a few times this last week, and I was looking at, are they the Solo 3s? Are they the new one with the W3 chip in the Beats over ones? And I've got the Studio headphones, which aren't the W3 ones. So that noise was me checking my headphones off my head and then pulling the glasses. And when I looked at the Solo ones, I was like, oh, they look really tiny, the little cups on them. Like, they're little, like, the ear bits don't cover your entire ear. They're, like, sort of go onto the side, sort of. They're not as big as the Studio ones. And I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, I just want the Studio ones with the W1 chip.
Yeah, I think if you want headphones, you want headphones, don't you? I mean, you know, if you want those. I bought a pair of the Solo 3s, did the Amazon, you know, Amazon Prime thing, just figured I'll try them out. And they're nice, and they worked, and, you know, I didn't, actually, it might not have been the Solo 3, it might have been the Solo 2. It wasn't the W1 chip version, it was the old version. But just talking about the size, for what they were, you know, they're already then massive for my bag if I wanted to take them anywhere. And then I just figured, well, I'm really just buying these for having in the office, because I'm not going to take them around with me, because I might as well just take a set of headphones. And then I just figured, well, a bit like you, it's like, well, there's, once you've gone down the route of saying, okay, I'm only going to have them in the office and I'm only going to wear them, you know, when I'm doing stuff there, then I don't need to have the smaller ones. I could just get the bigger ones. So, because they're headphones, so you might as well go all out, yeah, and get the big chunky.
I don't understand ear cups that don't go around your ear.
Yeah,
like, if you're gonna have it small, then it have like AirPods or like, yeah, the Power Beats, the ones that go into your ear, but don't have ones that just sort of sit like and cover maybe a half of your ear. I mean, that's just pointless because your ear's a funny shape, and so it's gonna, exactly, push it out slightly, and then the sound's gonna leak out and sound's gonna come in. I mean, when I used to work in London, and we're going to come to origin story stuff later, but for a while I worked in an open plan office for an agency in London, and it killed me. I couldn't stand it. And I went out and bought a pair of, they were at the time for me very expensive, they were like £330. It was the Bose noise cancelling headphones, with like a long cable that came out. And I put those on and it was just bliss because you just sit there and you couldn't hear a thing. Because it's very clever. They take sound in. They've got like little microphones on the sides. And then they basically reverse the sound waves so that what you get coming in is silence. And it doesn't work perfectly for variable noise, like background noise. But it goes some way to compressing it. Especially good on planes when you can get rid of like the white noise that's there. So it does that, and then you put the music in, and the music quality was really nice as well. And so I've always liked having big, chunky headphones that cancel noise. And I remember once being in an office, and they died at like 10 o'clock in the morning, like them, and they eventually just gave up. And I literally got up, went out of the office, went to Regent Street, bought a new pair, and then came back, and then worked an hour later into the evening. So it's like, there's no way I'm getting through the day without my headphones. No way in hell in an open plan office. And then after a while, I wanted to go wireless. And I picked up the Studio Beats, which aren't noise cancelling, but they've got decent sound quality and they're nice and chunky. I don't really need the noise cancelling anymore. So I use them most of the time in the office, if I can. If my wife's at home, I'll wear them, because she'll make a lot of noise, which is partially why we didn't record yesterday, because I forgot she's working from home. And she was like, oh, I'm going to do a workout and do all this stuff. And I was like, okay. And it was like 9:45. And I was like, do I cancel this? I was like, no, I won't, because I hate cancelling stuff at the last minute. And then she was downstairs, like, feeding the dogs. You just hear, boom, dang, crash. And I was like, oh, God, she makes so much noise, so much noise. And she's like, I'm going to do a workout in half an hour. And I can just imagine, like, this microphone picks up everything. You just hear this, dum, 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 yeah, dum, downstairs while she's working out. And then the bath running afterwards. And I was like, no, I can't do this.
Well, it's funny.
But when she's at home, I stick the headphones in, because then I don't need to answer the doorbell or anything like that. Or, you know. When I'm on my own, I have to rip it up the floor and else. So it's nice when she's at home, because I just stick my headphones on, I just crank the volume right up and I can't hear anything. I actually have a motion sensor hue that I put up when she's at home, so that if she opens my door, because my back's to my office door, so I don't know if she comes in, it scares the shit out of me sometimes. She'll come in with a cup of tea and I go, ah! So I have a motion sensor hue, so when she comes in, my lights start flashing red for a couple seconds, just so I know someone's walked in.
Oh, cool. I just got the... I just found out that there was a beta of, I think it was a beta, of the Ring app for macOS, which is quite nice.
Oh, nice.
Two things. So I got it. Well, I found out while I was away, actually. But I tend to miss the doorbell now. So what happens is Ring has this motion sensing thing, and it has obviously the Ring. And typically it'll ring on the phone. You'll get the Ring effect and you'll get a motion thing on. And if you've got your Chime, which is the little plug-in wireless speaker chime, chime effectively. I've got one of those in the office and one in the house, and they can be set so that you can have different motion sounds, you can have different things going on. And typically what will happen is for this, even though we were only doing this every 2 weeks, I would end up, putting everything on Do Not Disturb, and I'd remember to turn off the chime in the office. And then, of course, I'd forget to turn it back on. And then somehow, I wish Apple would get rid of the damn silent switches. I like it sometimes, but most of the times it's frustrating. I seem to accidentally switch my silent switch on now and again on my phone. And so I'll get these situations where I'll notice a ping on my watch and I'll look at it and it'll be a text message from my wife saying, door! Or, are you getting the door? Exclamation mark. And I'm like, what? And you look at your notifications and there's all these notes, someone, motion at your front door, someone is at your door, motion at your back gate, someone, all this stuff going on. So what's nice with the Ring app is that you have it on the desktop and it just auto pops up straight with the video. So this video window just suddenly appears when there's, you know, motion or whatever detected, and so you can immediately see. And so I've installed that. It looks really, it's really good. I mean, it basically is like the iOS app. It looks like, I guess, like an iPad-y style app, the way that they've done it. But it's very similar styling. It's really nice.
That's
and the other thing I was going to say on the headphones is the open plan thing is always funny, and we'll get to this as well. But the funniest thing is how many people I used to sit in an open plan office with headphones on and not listen to anything. It's like, I wonder how many people actually have the headphones as an indicator of, please don't pester me or come up to me and ask me a stupid question because I'm working. When actually, they're you know, if you just lifted the headphones away, you're not listening.
I was thinking about the Ring doorbell. I'm going to get one in the next. It's interesting you're saying about having your phone, you switch it into silent sometimes, because my phone is always on silent. I never have it off silent, and I have all the vibration turned off. So right. I have no indication that anything is happening on my phone. And I've been doing that for years because I don't really use my phone, to be honest, which is an odd thing for an app developer to say. It's always really awkward when people say, oh, what's your favorite app? And I'm like, I don't really have one. I rarely use my phone. But since I've got the Apple Watch, it's perfect because I always used to miss phone calls because the phone would ring, and if it was in my pocket, it wouldn't vibrate, it wouldn't make any noise, I'd have no idea. And now my watch vibrates when I get phone calls, which is great. So I imagine if I had the Ring doorbell, I'd have the same thing, that the notifications would go through to my watch, and yeah. So I'd see it that way, so I wouldn't miss them as much. But that's definitely, I'm looking forward to getting that, because then I can have my headphones on at home the time as well, which would be, although I have just upgraded my speaker in my office to a new Sonos. I've gone a bit Sonos crazy.
How is that?
I mentioned maybe a couple of weeks ago that I was thinking of getting one.
Yep.
And now I've got three. I've spent about £700 on speakers in the last week. Kind of mad.
I saw that the soundbar, the one that they're pitching as the sort of one that goes under your TV, is out.
Yeah. Oh, so nice.
I'm still tempted, obviously. My audio system is just, I replaced it last year. My wife did the old told you so thing this week. So we used to have a silver, I can't remember the make of it. It was really old, probably 10 years old. It was a silver Sony DVD player, DVD and CD player sort of stereo system. It was quite flat. It was really, it was like silver. It was like stainless steel almost. It was really nice with a sort of curved front. And it had these little cube speakers. We had it for years. You know, it was 5.1 or whatever they call it. So you've got two at the back, two at the front and the center, and a subwoofer. Had a really nice design subwoofer. And we used it for years, and it was a really nice system. All wired, obviously, you know, but DVD player, the whole works. And I think the sound started going. Something happened with, like, the power that was coming out of it. It didn't matter how high you did the volume. It was almost like something had blown inside it. There was still sound, but it was just really quiet. So it got to that point where I thought, okay, let's replace it. So I looked up something. I wanted wireless. You know, I don't want to be pulling up carpets and hiding wires and doing all this sort of nonsense. So I wanted something that could do wireless. So the first thing I looked at was a soundbar with wireless speakers, which was rubbish. The wireless speakers were rubbish, but the soundbar was just too big. It was just massive, and it would have actually sat in front of the base of the television and overhung the stand that it's on. So, I mean, and we've got kids, we've got small kids and babies, and it's like you immediately go, no. That's something. Nah. Well, I've already had the TV. I was already on a walk once and just checked the camera in the sitting room to see the TV being put back on the stand after my daughter had pulled it down. So, like, great. So I remember looking. It was one of those moments where I sort of was walking along. I think I'd started playing with the cameras and everything. So I looked at it, looked at this video of my wife pushing the TV back up, and I'm thinking, you know, you sort of look at it and go, okay, right, turn that off, put it in your pocket.
I'll see if that gets mentioned later.
Yeah, I'll deal with it. Yeah, all the HDMI cables were bent, and it was all, anyway. So that was a disaster. So that went back, Amazon Prime job. And I ended up going for this stereo system, again, Sony, which is sort of it's a 3D, it's a Blu-ray player, 3D Blu-ray player. We've got 3D. And so it all seemed to work quite nicely and would fit quite nicely. It's a Sony TV. Everything should hook up nicely. But the key thing was it had this proprietary type wireless rear speakers. So it has like a little unit that you sort of hide away, and then that plugs into speakers. And it's the wireless is fantastic. With anything I've tried previously, if I'd sit downstairs with my laptop or something and I'd put my Wi-Fi on, which you normally would, you'd hear crackling on these rear speakers. It's like, what?
No,
but this is perfect. No. This is absolutely perfect. The sound is... I mean, there's the it's instant. The moment we've got the box, the wireless box plugged into a Wemo, because it was hooked up to some lights or something. So what happens is, I sort of say, I'll turn the window boxes on, and then this thing comes on if it's been switched off, and it's instant. I mean, if there's sound on the TV, when this comes on, it's literally, there's no pairing, there's no 5 second delay. It's just instantly you get the surround sound. So that's lovely. But the unit itself is like this black, you know, the sort of black glass type flat box, but it's a wedge shape. So it's a really, and there's the drive is on the top. So it's one of these boxes you can't put anything on, you know, you can't stack it. You can't, it has to sit on its own shelf with nothing on top of it. It's a wedge, so you can't even put something slightly on top of it, like a center speaker or anything. So it takes up a lot of space. The speakers are not cubes, which is, you know, I knew when I bought it they were longer speakers, but they're so long that I have to sort of, I can't really put them on the floor, so they have to actually go sideways in the cabinet, which is just bloody crazy. Oh. I've got to get a new cabinet and sort something out. But the worst problem with this damn system is, it when it works with the TV, it works amazingly. It all just understands each other. You just turn it on, the sound comes out. But every now and again, probably once a week, it just fails to start up. It fails to come out of standby. And it sits there with this flashing LED light on the front, which doesn't mean anything. And you literally have to unplug it, you know, wait 10 seconds, plug it back in. Then you have to wait for it to come up with its hello startup. Then as soon as it comes up with a hello startup, it goes into standby. It sort of goes hello and then switches off. It's like someone coming into your house, go hello, walking off. It's like, come back. And so then you have to press it and then wait for it to come on again, and then you get sound. And this will always happen when you're trying to watch something or that's important, or you've just made supper and you want to put something on and your food's getting cold, or the kids have messed it up or need to watch something and they're going crazy and you're trying to calm them down. And it's like sort of, I don't know, maybe 3 minutes of pain that I have to go through like every week. So I'm looking at other options. I'm interested in how the Sonos thing's working.
The Sonos ones, I've not got the Sonos stuff for the living room yet.
Right.
So what I've bought so far is I bought... they've basically got three speakers, like main speakers, the Play 1, the Play 3, and the Play 5, which are based on how many speakers they actually have internally. And so I bought two of the Play 1s and one of the Play 3s. And the Play 3 is in my office, and the sound quality is so good. and so I literally have that just behind me, and I'm not using speakers on my computer anymore. The Mac Pro actually has a speaker built into it, which I didn't realise. It's pretty good, actually. You could listen to music through it. You wouldn't want to, but you could. But that's fine for if I just want to watch stuff on, if I want to watch a quick YouTube video or, you know, hear a sound effect or whatever it might be. So I have that. And then I'm using the Sonos app on the Mac to then control the music that's on my speaker, which is behind me, because then I get much better sound quality. Because unfortunately, there isn't a way to output all sound from the computer to the Sonos, because it's not really a traditional speaker. It's like a standalone speaker. The more expensive Play 5 has a line, and then you can do that, but you wouldn't really want to, because you want it to do its whole thing wirelessly. It'd defeat the object to have a big cable going from. So it sits behind me and it's connected to my Apple Music account. But it's also nice because you can set up multiple Apple Music accounts. So I've got my wife's Apple Music account set up on Sonos as well. So when she wants to listen to music, she can just choose her account and it lists all of her playlists and all of her music. And then she can set it to play. But when I want mine, I can switch to that instead. The only annoying thing is that it doesn't have support for smart playlists. So I have quite a few smart playlists set up. That I use, like things like I've got one of all my songs I've rated 5 stars, or more complex ones where it excludes a load of stuff. So like, here are songs that I like to listen to, excluding any that have got the genre of Christmas. I don't need to hear those 11 months out of the year. But it doesn't support those, so you have to copy and paste them into a new normal playlist for Sonos to see them, which is a bit of a hassle. But so I've got that one in my office, and that works great because I can just use the Mac a keyboard still, so I can press like next and pause play and it'll change the tracks on the Sonos. But then downstairs in the kitchen we've got two of the Play 1s, and you can set them to act as a stereo pair, so they're treated as one speaker but they are just a left and a right speaker all the time. Pretty cool. You can just group them as well, so if you wanted to. At the moment, because our kitchen's quite small, we actually have one in the kitchen and one in the dining room. And so I've split them into separate ones, but grouped them. So it's not the left and right channel. just so I can set the music louder in the kitchen sometimes than the dining room. The way that the sound echoes round, and when you've got stuff cooking and that, you want it to be slightly louder than the other one. But you can do them either way, so you can group them and then it'll just play whatever you throw at it. But you can control them individually, or you can have them as a pair where it's literally seen as like one speaker, left and right channel. So they've been working really well, and I'm definitely going to be getting more, and I'm definitely going to get the Sonos stuff for the living room, because that's really interesting, because you can get the play bar or the play bass, and the bass is like a thing that you put your TV on top of. Unfortunately, it's quite small. Like, I looked at it and I was convinced I wanted to get that, but I saw one in John Lewis and I was like, actually, our TV stand is too big for that. It would hang off the edge and look stupid. So we'll go for the bar. But the sound bar is huge, and you can just use that if you want, and you can mount it on a wall. But then if you want to add the subwoofer, you can add that, and then that makes the play bar sound better because it's no longer having to deal with the bass, so it can use those speakers for other stuff. And then if you want rear to get the 5.1 surround, then you add two of the Play 1s or two of the Play 3s, and then it will use those as well wirelessly. So you can sort of build it up piece by piece, because it's not cheap. Like the Play Bar's 700 quid, the subwoofer's 700 quid, the Play 1s would be 400 for two of them. So it adds up quickly. So it's nice that you can sort of build it up. So I'll probably start with the Play Bar, then add the rear speakers, and then add the subwoofer.
That's interesting.
But about the what you were saying about yours switching off and having problems like that, the nicest thing with it is that it never turns off, because it's still a Sonos speaker. So if your TV's off, it doesn't turn off the sound, because you might want to stream audio to it. So it's always connected to Wi-Fi because it's always listening for input. So you never have those problems, because you don't have to like sync it up with your TV and have it turn on and off, stuff like that. So it's pretty good. So I'm definitely get them. But so far, my experience has been very, very good with the Sonos.
And are they AirPlay as well, or is it just...
No.
Okay. So you have to
use AirPlay. Yeah, if you want AirPlay, you'd have to get the Sonos 5, the Play 5, and then put a AirPort Express like behind it and line into it. That's how they recommend it if you want AirPlay, but I don't think they've got any plans to add it. There are a few apps that let you stream directly to the Sonos. Okay. So... I know it's got like full Alexa support, but I'm not entirely sure how that's. So you can, if you say something like play this music on my Sonos, I think it can stream your Amazon stuff straight to it, or does it in some clever way. So that's got full support. Spotify, their apps have all got direct support for Sonos. So there'll be like an icon, kind of like Chromecast. So from the Spotify app, you can just select the speaker that you want to send it to. But for Apple Music and stuff like that, you're limited to the Sonos app. And the app's good. It's really interesting. Because it sort of controls all of your music, you basically add services to it, and then they're like listed on the left-hand side. So I've got the TuneIn Radio app I've got listed. I've got Apple Music. I've got Calm Radio and Spotify. So I've got all of those in there, and then you can tap on any of them. So if I tap on the radio one, it'll then show me all the various radio stations, and I can go through it as if I was using the TuneIn app, basically. And I can go, okay, I want Radio 4 or whatever. And if I tap that, then it'll start playing it out the speakers. But you can also add things to your Sonos favorites and create Sonos playlists. So you can create playlists and favorites across all the different services. So for example, I have a playlist which has got some music from an artist who has different songs on Spotify and Apple Music, and I have all of them in one playlist. So I can say, Sonos, play this playlist of music, and it streams it from whichever service it needs to play the music.
Oh, so, hold on, you can talk to it as well. It's got
that's just me.
That's even more impressive.
I mean, you probably, I guess you can with Alexa, because I guess you could say, tell my Sonos to play my The Lost Fingers songs by that or whatever, and it'll do it. But the favorites is good. So if I look in my favorites, it's got all various different things. It's got like, okay, I've got BBC Radio 4 from a station. I've got a Guardians of the Galaxy playlist from Apple Music. I've got an album from Apple Music. I've got a playlist from Sonos, which splits between Apple Music and Spotify. So it's got like a list of my favorites, and I can just tap on any of those and it'll just start playing them. So it's pretty good. And then you can choose also at the top, it'll list all the different speakers you've got. And so I can, if I tap it now, it's got kitchen/dining room, and I can play separate music to that one than to what I'm playing in the office, because they connect directly. So it's really interesting, just because they, it's a very different way of doing it. Like everyone else, you kind of stream music from your phone to the thing, but it's really nice that I can sit on the sofa and I've got music playing in the living room or the dining room and kitchen, whatever. But on my phone, if I want to, if I'm scrolling through my Twitter feed and then someone's posted a video that's like 6 seconds long, I can click on it and watch it, and the sound comes out of my phone and it doesn't start playing it out of my speakers or stop the music on the speakers. So it actually in practice works a lot better than I thought it would. Very fast, no lag or anything like that. So
yeah, it's interesting. Yeah,
it's been a success.
I mean, if I go down the TV route with it, yeah, it's gonna have to be a piecemeal thing, because it is gonna get fairly expensive. Yes. Because I'll have to buy a different player, because obviously the system I've got has the built-in Blu-ray. And you know, I don't buy a lot of Blu-ray discs at all. I got it because we've got a 3D TV, and it's nice to be able to get some. I buy like the odd movie that's, you know, I got Rogue One and stuff like that, and the Star Wars stuff, and the Lego movie and things like that. And I'm going to order the Batman Lego. It's a nice thing when they have like a little film night. But actually, interesting side note to that, I'm not sure if I mentioned it last time, the trouble I had getting a Rogue One 3D.
You did mention that you'd had two of them. I saw on Twitter you got a third one.
Yes. So
that works.
Yeah, so there's two interesting things about this. So the backstory is that I had Force Awakens on 3D, worked great, and I ordered the Rogue One 3D discs, put it in. The 3D disc itself wouldn't read. It just said can't read disc and made some funny noises. So I checked the Force Awakens one and it was fine for months, so I thought it might have been broken, but yep, it's all fine. The 2D disc worked fine, and the 2D sort of extra. I think the 2D disc actually didn't work, but the 2D extras disc worked. So I just thought faulty discs. So Amazon return, get another one, exactly the same problem. So I thought, okay, this is obviously some sort of issue. So I left a review, but not about the film, just saying my disc was unreadable. And I couldn't find anybody else talking about it, which was interesting. Then weeks later, I sort of look up and I thought, well, okay, I'm buying the same disc again. So it's probably they're in the same batch. They're the same, you know, they're in the same bunch that they were made in. It's possible that maybe if there's a different set, that maybe that was a separate batch. It was made at a different time, you know, whatever. So I thought, can't hurt to try it. So there was a tin set that had sort of cards and extra things in it. It was more expensive, but I just figured it was Prime and I'll try it. So I ordered that one. It came, popped it in, worked perfectly. No problems at all. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at, and I'm not saying this was because I said anything, but there must have been other people who had the same problem. I noticed a little statement at the bottom of the listing on Amazon for all of the Rogue One 3D discs, which said firmware information or player information. And it basically says something to the effect of, if you're having trouble playing this, you may need a firmware update from your manufacturer. Now, the only thing is, I have tried to do an update on my Sony in the past and it says there's no update. I don't know if it did an update in the meantime. It may have done. They may have pushed something down to it. You can never find out. It never tells you that it's been updated or anything, or I've never seen it do that. So it's possible it never has, but it's also possible there was an update, it happened and it's working. But it was interesting that they put that statement up, you know, that there's clearly something is going on.
Yeah. When you mentioned it last time, I said to you, oh, have you updated the firmware?
Yeah, because exactly.
Quite often that stuff changes. I think it's mainly the DRM stuff.
Yeah. I suspect it happened. I suspect something happened while we were away, or you know, not here, whatever. Cool.
So your current, you said that your Blu-ray player is integrated with your speakers. Like, do you have like a big base unit that's got everything in it, like the speaker controller and the Blu-ray?
No,
is that what you're saying?
No, it's basically the player. So I guess it's probably a little bit bigger than a MacBook Pro. It's probably about a 15-inch MacBook Pro footprint. You know, it's that sort of size, and about it's a wedge shape. So at its thickest, it's probably 3 inches. Three down to sort of 1.5 with a glass top. So that's the actual player. That's the disc and the gubbins, the controllers and all that stuff. And then the speakers are all separate. So there's a separate subwoofer, separate fronts and center. And then the wireless, there's sort of another box that almost looks like a library book, which you plug in, and then that goes to the two rear speakers.
But like there's no way you can tell it to put the audio through HDMI and come out of like your TV.
I don't know, actually. There are connections at the back.
If it does, then that'll just work with the Sonos. You wouldn't need a new Blu-ray.
Yeah, so I could actually
connect to your TV.
Yeah, so I could remove all the speakers and just have the connector going. Yeah, so that's true. I could do that. That would be interesting.
Although, if you do want a new Blu-ray player, I would strongly recommend that the best thing to do is buy an Xbox One S, because then you get a 4K Blu-ray player, and it's the cheapest 4K Blu-ray player you can buy. But then you also get an Xbox One.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Because I have the Xbox One S, and I bought it mainly because of the 4K upgrade, because 4K TV already. And the 4K Blu-ray players cost about £300, £400.
Right.
Whereas the Xbox One S, you can get for about £200, £220. And that has a full working 4K Blu-ray player, which works perfectly. I've got a couple 4K Blu-rays on it now, which look great. Planet Earth 2 is so good in 4K. But then you've got it, and you've also got the joy of having an Xbox One console for free as well, basically. So it's well worth it. If you're thinking of getting a 4K TV at any point in the future,
yeah,
then it's worth doing it that way. Then
yeah,
it'd
be interesting.
Got it.
Yeah, I'll look into that. Cool.
I think they do 3D. They do 3D Blu-rays as well. Like the Blu-ray players can pad off.
Yeah, because it should. I mean, there's no gubbins that make it a 3D Blu-ray player, is it? Because essentially, it's.
Oh, there are. Yeah.
Oh, are there? Okay.
Because there are some Blu-ray players. If you can buy a Blu-ray player that won't do 3D Blu-ray,
so you
have to get a specific one. Like, I think nowadays every Blu-ray player is a 3D Blu-ray one. But when it first came out, it was a very big thing that you had to get the specific ones because it didn't have chips or probably firmware upgrades to do it. Well, worth it. But I could definitely recommend an Xbox One S. It seems ridiculous to buy a games console as a Blu-ray player, but it the best Blu-ray player out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Very peculiar.
And then I'd get an Xbox One in the house because I've got one in the office at the moment.
Exactly. And seeing as everything's like cloud saved, it's nice because you can literally, for a long time, I had two, not the Xbox Ones, I had two Xbox 360s. I had one in the bedroom and one in the living room. And it's great because I'd like play Skyrim downstairs for like, and then turn it off, go upstairs, and you could just continue on from where you were because it syncs the save file to the cloud. So
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Even with like the games that you, I think it does it with every game. It's just like a default thing. So you can literally just get a new one, log into it with your account, and everything will be synced exactly as it is on your other one. And so you can just go back and forth between them, which is kind of nice.
That's very cool.
It's a good way of Lego Dimensions for the kids.
Yes.
Get them hooked on that.
get them losing those. Stuff down the sofa and stuff.
So all the talk of speakers and stuff, do you want to talk about that, the Amazon Echo and the rumored speaker and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not sure about all this. So I can't remember how long it was, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, whatever, they came out with this Echo Look, which is the camera. So when I first saw the sort of thing about the Amazon Echo Look, I thought, oh, they've done a camera. It's like a security camera. You know, it's an Echo you can talk to, but it's going to be a camera. You could film, do security, CCTV, that sort of thing.
That would have been my assumption, a canary that has Alexa built into
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Canary's a good... that's exactly what I thought it was going to be. So you could say, you know, I'm not going to say the word, but you say, Echo, I'm leaving, or Echo, you know, Echo, we're leaving, or Echo, goodbye, and it would go into its, you know, monitoring mode or whatever. But it turns out this Look is actually a fashion camera. So it's actually like a selfie camera. So the typical photos you see of people, you know, they take a photo of themselves in front of the mirror, and they always take it in such a way that you see them holding the phone and all that stuff because they're just taking the reflection effectively. That's what it's for. So you can stand in front and say, Echo, take a photo, or Echo, take a selfie, and it will then take a photo. You can say, take a video, and you can turn around and you can see what you look like from behind and all this. And then it's got this style aspect to it where it uses apparently machine learning, AI, and a database of experts, information on what goes well together, and gives you a rating. So you can take a photo of two outfits, it puts them side by side, and then it tells you the percentage of which one's the better, which is interesting. And it also, you can keep a library of these photos, so you can, as they say, take your wardrobe with you, which you're not really doing that. You know, you're just taking photos of your wardrobe. But anyway.
Why do you need to take your wardrobe with
you? I know. But there's a couple of things out of this. So firstly, what's interesting is who they're targeting at. If you watch the video, which is about a two-minute video, I think it's about a minute and a half, you see a man in like 1 minute, 28 seconds. The pictures of men on the website, but it's pretty much targeted at the female market, which opens up quite a few different things. I mean, firstly, you're putting a camera in the place where you get changed. There's all kinds of strange, you know, people are worried about being listened to anyway with Alexa. People are worried about that anyway, about the always listening devices. You're now putting potentially could be an always watching device in your, you know, intimate room, effectively. So there's a few comments from people on articles about, you know, how it could suddenly, accidentally or whatever, kick in while you're, you know, doing something you might be doing, and accidentally for doing selfie pornos and stuff like this. So I find the move quite interesting. I find it quite odd that they've gone after that market, that they're targeting, you know, that whole style selfie area. I just find it weird. I find it a tiny bit creepy in a way, but just odd. I find it like an odd move. And then
I don't see the point of it. Yeah. I mean, I just don't get it. Like, is it to answer the question, does my bum look big in this? Like,
yes,
is it basically for single women to ask the camera, how do I look?
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
It just seems crazy.
Yeah. I don't see. It's not something I would have ever thought would be a problem that needs solving, basically. But
it sounds like something that a startup would kickstart and try and sell for 400 quid.
Exactly.
That's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like something Amazon makes.
Yeah, it's a very odd move. Now, we add to that the even stranger move this week of the Echo. I think it's called the Echo Look or the Echo View. No, Echo Look is the camera, I think. Yeah, Echo View is this touchscreen Echo that was rumored for ages. People were talking about, you know, the Echo having some sort of screen capability. There was rumors of it, there was leaks of it, and it's now been released. And it's a wedge-shaped screen that sits...
It looks awful.
It looks like
It's a horrible design.
Yeah, I actually looked up I was reminded of something, and I did a look up of some Star Trek Next Generation. If you look at some of the screens they have on some of the desks in that, it looks very similar. It's a sort of wedge-shaped screen. I think it's a 6-inch screen or something like that. It's got a camera at the top, and then the bottom is like a speaker. So it's a big wedge-shaped thing. And again, this is a really strange move because there's two things. If you watch the intro video, they do these great use cases of the guy. There's a guy cooking, and then he wants to call his mum, and his hands are full of dough or whatever, and he's like, you know, call mum, and then she comes up because obviously she's got one of these things, and she's also in the kitchen because that's where she'd have to be, because that's where it is, because it's plugged in, and she's washing up and they're having a conversation.
That'd be a very good conversation if she's washing up and he's baking. Hi mum, how are you? Yeah, I'm great, thanks, how are the
but it's that sort of exactly but it's that sort of it's that sort of thing or it's there's one of, there's a bit of in a playroom or something, playing with the baby and the mother or the father or on the other, as well, as long as you're in the particular room, basically.
Amazon's always with your family.
Yeah, and the way they're saying it is okay. So it can answer questions more. It can give you more information. So when you ask for the weather, it's going to give you more information visually that will go with the audio that comes out. You can say, I want to hear my video briefing. So play my daily briefing and it shows video clips. And you can even play YouTube videos. And I think they're doing like Amazon shows and things that you'll be able to play on it as well. So you'll actually be able to play stuff you could watch. Now, I sort of can get that in a situation where you're in the kitchen. So in our kitchen, we've got a little 10-inch screen. It's one of those ones that they take for when they're filming. You plug them into cameras, you know, field cameras or whatever. And it's a small little screen. It's got an HDMI input. I've got an Apple TV Velcro to the back of it. And, you know, I can watch stuff. I can play stuff. I can stream to it, whatever. And it's handy to have on for that sort of thing while I'm cooking or doing. With this thing, well, firstly, part of their advert shows it on a bedside table. I mean, their photo, if you look at some of the promotional photos, it's sitting next to a lamp. It looks like something that would be on a little bedside table or a side table or something. So I don't get the video side of it. If I'm at home and I'm in bed or I'm in my bedroom and I want to watch something, I'm either going to watch it on the TV, which is on the wall at the end of the room, or I'm going to watch it on a tablet or a phone. Having something next to me that's sort of angled, you know, it's not in my field of view. Having something... For some reason, just some music's just started on this site that I'm on.
So you suddenly went very tinny.
Yeah, auto Forbes video starts playing. Bloody stupid thing.
Lovely.
Anyway, so you've got this thing sort of behind you on the bedside table. So what do I do? Do I turn to watch it? Do I pick it up and pull the cable across and have it on my... It just doesn't make sense.
I guess on the bedside table, it's more like when you get out of bed and you're like getting ready. You know, you stood putting your pants and your watch on. and you're like, give me my daily briefing, and you can watch it immediately right there while you're doing it. But it does seem odd. Like, all of this stuff seems to be better served by, if you imagined an iPad mini that had the smart connector on it, and then they built a stand for it, which could be plugged in.
Yep.
Then that would be better, because then when you're in the kitchen, you take it down, stick it on its dock, and then it's charging, and you can get all these features and do all this stuff. And exactly. It's lovely. But then you can take it off and do whatever you want anywhere else. And you could have stands that aren't necessarily got power going into them. You know, they've got 10-hour battery life.
Yeah.
But if you had, like, it's very much like the Nintendo Switch. So I have the Switch, and I will probably buy another dock for it for my bedroom, because at the moment I have a dock downstairs that came with it that's in the living room. So what I can do is I can stick the Switch into the dock, and I can sit on the sofa and play the Switch on the TV where it looks better, because it's at 1080p rather than 720. But when I'm in bed, I have it in handheld mode because I don't have a dock up there and I'm not going to keep unplugging it. So I'll probably just buy another dock, because then I can stick it in there, and then I can stick in bed and play it. And yep. That works great. And that's exactly what you want of one of these devices. You don't want like a tablet that is fixed in a single location. It makes no sense.
Exactly. What you've just
like
said.
I had for a very long time, I had a magnetic iPad holder on my fridge.
Mm.
And I had a iPad 2 or iPad 3 mounted on the fridge. And I used that for all kinds of stuff. Like, I actually have a, we have a family sharing account for me and my wife. And then we have another account that's called Dodson Home. And that has its own Apple account. And that's sort of like part of the family sharing. So we have like a shared calendar on there and notes, and it's all on the fridge because it's useful sometimes. And I've done the occasional FaceTime call on it, and it works great. The only problem is that I have to put a wire up to plug it in and keep it wired. And that works fine, and I could take it off and use it. Fortunately, I have many iPads, so I don't need to use that one all the time. But if I was constrained to one iPad, I could feasibly use it for that case and as an iPad. I just don't see the point of spending money on a single little ever-listening speaker to have in my home. It just doesn't seem sensible to me.
So there's two things for me about this. One is that it seems to be going backwards in time a little bit. It's almost like we're living in a reality where the iPhone, the iPad didn't exist. You know, they weren't invented. They didn't happen. And this is like something that you might see on a 1970s or 80s show saying, this is what life's going to be like in the future. We're going to have these devices in our homes, in certain rooms, and we can talk to each other. You know, it's using some proprietary method of talking. I think there's going to be Skype options, potentially, whatever. It's also got a really creepy feature, which is supposed to be a benefit where for elderly or whatever, where you can actually get it to auto-answer the other end. So you can actually make a call and it will auto-answer, which is then particularly creepy. Because
I don't trust shit like that that's built into software. That's an exploit waiting to happen.
Exactly. So that's the first thing. It's this sort of retro feel to it. It feels like something that I would see in Space 1999, you know, apart from it's in color and their little screens were in black and white. That's what it feels like, or Star Trek or whatever. Mm. The second thing is, any progression of this device feels like they're reinventing the tablet. So exactly what you just said, if Apple were to say, okay, we are going to do Siri Home or whatever we're going to call it, Siri, you know, Siri at Home or just Siri or whatever it's going to be called. But what it is actually a really nice speaker with a dock of some kind, whether it's a Lightning, whether it's a the connector, like you say, which would make perfect sense if they want to push the Pro devices, because what's the point of giving people with the old devices? I know that would be nice, but you want people to buy the new one, so let's get people buying the new, you know, smart connected devices. And have that as a speaker that can sit there and you can talk to it. You don't have to put anything on it. You get it out of the box, you turn it on, and you say, hey, Dingus, what's the weather like? And it answers you in a nice, bass, loud voice through this really nice speaker system and plays music and does all those cool things. But just like you said, if you just take your iPad, which you've probably got with you, and you just pop it on the little stand and it maybe starts charging it, but immediately now it links and suddenly this becomes the second screen that when you ask something from Siri, it now displays it on the screen as well. That is something I can see totally happening. And that ability to say, FaceTime my wife, and you're FaceTiming her with the camera, just as a normal FaceTime call on the iPad, but the sound is going through this really nice speaker system, but you can lift it up and walk away with it. That is where the real power of this is. And my feeling is now, where do they go next? So is the next version of this product, because the feedback they get saying, oh, it's really nice, but I'd really like to make it portable. Okay, we need it with a rechargeable battery pack or something. And it's
introducing
like
the Fire tablet. Yeah,
exactly. So that's exactly what they're doing. It's that they are reverse launching. They're sort of going back to a device 10 years ago, and then they're going to end up going, here's the new version of the Alexa show, and it's basically a tablet. I don't get it.
I've had strong feelings on this for a while now, because I really wanted a Siri speaker. I've wanted a Siri speaker for years. I was all in for AirPlay, loved AirPlay, used to have AirPlay speakers. Now that I've got the Sonos, it's like, you're too late. I'm not going back now. There's very little that's going to persuade me to go back to AirPlay. Mm. And the Siri speaker, I kind of feel like the Apple Watch and AirPods have killed it. Like, what is the point of having something fixed in your home that you can talk to when you have it on your wrist all the time, everywhere you go, and yeah, that's got a screen on it? It's like, I don't see the point of it. Like, if I have it in the kitchen, I understand that having, you know, Siri on the phone was a little bit of a hassle because if it was in your pocket, whilst if you shouted loud enough with the iPhone 6S, you can get it to activate and hear it. You probably don't want to do it that way, and you could have it on the desk and say, you know, it activates just by saying the phrase nowadays. Mm. You don't have to have it plugged in and all that kind of. So already it's kind of limited us to the point of having a standalone speaker. But as soon as you've got an Apple Watch, it's like, well, now even if my hands are full, I can talk to it.
Yeah.
And if you've got the AirPods, you can just put those in and speak to it. But to be honest, I mean, I rarely speak to Siri anyway.
Yeah, me too.
I don't ever get the feeling of asking her a question, because if I do, she usually kicks me to a website anyway. So it's
exactly.
Like,
eh. Well, this is the other thing.
I might use it for a timer. Timers are useful, but I just do that on the watch.
Yeah, and exactly.
If you want to ask the weather, the same thing on the watch. So I kind of feel like I don't see the market for having a standalone speaker that listens to. It seems like they've already made the jump by having Siri in AirPods. It's like, well, why go back?
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't make sense to me.
The only reason I could see them doing it is to complement the current setup that you might have. So it might be nice to have a device that is, if you don't have all the Sonos and you don't have all the other speakers or whatever, you're now getting a really nice speaker which still works with Siri, but basically sounds better, has a better mic system, you know, beamforming mics and all those things, so it can hear you from anywhere. That could be the benefit of them selling it like that. But if it does have this capability to plug into your iPad in or whatever, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
So I could sort of see that, especially if you're going, well, actually, it's a smart connector. It's not a lightning connector. You have to buy an iPad Pro and stuff like that. I could totally get that. But this device just doesn't make much sense to me. And the other thing that not worries me, because I'm not that bothered about it, but the other thing I could feel could happen is it's very easy at the moment to write Alexa skills and to write Alexa services. It's really, you know, quite a cool development process to go through and get these things out. And I feel like, I've got Alexa's pretty much in all the rooms, in most of the rooms in the house. There's pretty much, I think in the toilet's the only place that you could say Alexa and she's not going to hear you. You know, pretty much everywhere else you can say something. And I think with the combination of the device and its capabilities, plus the developers and what everything they can do, it could be, and it is at the moment, a really cool voice platform that works really well. I get much better voice recognition than I get with Siri. I find the openness of it and the connectivity to it, you know, much better than
a large part system. Of that is because it's much more specific, though, isn't it? You
True.
Have to have very specific phrases.
Oh, absolutely,
you've
definitely.
Got a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You've got to get them in the right order. I mean, I can't even remember the sequence of words to turn my cooker on now. So I just press I press the power button like an animal, you know. So I can't remember what that is. Some long phrase you have to say. But the power of it for me is the fact that it can. You've got pretty good voice recognition. You've got pretty good way that it can deliver the information back by voice. And there's some really good examples of how, and I saw a demo of this when I was in Atlanta last week from Axway, the company I work with to help out with dev stuff. They did a really good demo with banking. So they had an Alexa on stage. They had an Echo on stage, and the presenter basically said, oh, what's my bank balance? Which, you know, typical example, it responds with what the bank balance is. Now, obviously,
yeah, to walk into someone's home and just shout that out.
Yes, that's good. That is good. But what was interesting then, it said, it followed up by saying, we've noticed your mortgage isn't fixed and all these different services. And then as she was saying that she wanted to do these things, it was sending her not only the sort of text messages, the sort of push messages to confirm details, but it was also sending links to the documents to sign. And it was a very quick demo, and it obviously there's some security concerns there, but it showed how you could use the voice with the phones, with the other devices, and get all that working nicely together. My feeling with this is that it might make developers a bit lazier, because you could quite easily say, Echo, what's happening tonight or what's happening tomorrow? And that's or whatever the tool or service or skill is. And instead of the skill actually coming back and articulating that back with voice, it could just say, I've showed it on the screen. You know, I've showed it on, yeah. You know what I mean? It just, by adding the screen, you immediately take away the emphasis on the developer. It's a bit like, it's a bad example probably, but it's a bit like tweets going to unlimited characters or something. You know, the beauty of tweets is you've got 140 characters or whatever it is. You've got to make sure you get your point across. That's you end up, you know, writing something, editing it. The number of times I've removed words, I've made my tweet much better because I'm editing it to get it down in terms of characters. If you immediately say, well, now you can do 10,000 characters, there'll be all kinds of crap all over it. And it'll have all kinds of consequences for the apps and the interfaces and the UIs and everything about how these things get rendered. And I just don't understand when I feel like they, I'm not going to say they've got the voice market sewn up, but they've got a pretty good head start with voice in terms of what they've done. You know, there are hotels in the States putting Alexas in every room. You know, it's a huge thing. To suddenly add the screen, is almost saying, okay, you don't have to focus on voice now. You can just get it to display stuff on the screen. And again, it goes back to the, why wouldn't I use the tablet? Why wouldn't I use Fire? Why wouldn't I just buy a cheap Android tablet and stick it on my fridge or stick it in the kitchen and I get more flexibility? So I don't get it. It feels like the Echo team, suddenly someone's come in or something's happened and said, these are the two products we need to do. And it's like, I don't get them. It's weird.
No, I mean, Siri has gone a different way in that they're focused more on voice now.
Yeah.
Because they obviously, it started on the phone and then it went to the watch and the Mac and then it's gone to the AirPods. And so they're kind of promoting the voice thing. But they've always been very good at things having multiple answers depending on what device you're using. So if you ask, how's the weather on the watch or to the phone or to the car or to the AirPods, you'll get a different response on each one depending on what you're looking at and what you're using. Like, even to the extent that if you say, hey, phone, what's the weather today? It knows that you didn't activate it by pressing the button.
Exactly.
So it doesn't give you the visual response, it gives you the audio response. Whereas if you hold the button down and ask what the weather is, then it gives you the full visual thing and it reads out a bit of it. And that's clever because it knows your context, answers accordingly, and it means that whenever they add a new intent or whatever the way that they do it, they know that they have to focus on all those things. Now, sometimes it does make you like look at stuff on the phone, in the same way that the watch, sometimes if you get like a message with a video or something, it'll say, please look at this on your phone rather than on the watch.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And there are examples where it doesn't always work seamlessly, but generally they're pretty good at going, well, we think audio is the best way to put across this information. And if there is definitely no way that you could see this without a device, it'll tell you, in the same way that if you ask it a question that it should search the web for. That's a good example. If I ask it something on my watch and it does the search the web thing, it'll be check your phone.
Yeah.
And then you open the phone and it's already handed off and done the stuff. So it works that way. So I see what you mean, that they could get to a point where people are just doing stuff expecting that you react with the screen. But most of the time you don't want to. Even if you are using a tablet or a phone, you don't necessarily want that.
And also,
Same way with CarPlay.
Yeah, and also because this thing has a camera built in, I don't know what the price is going to be. I think it's about 300 quid. So it's obviously more expensive than a normal Echo. But the sort of thing is, it's almost like, well, if you're going to go down that route of getting Echoes in most of your rooms, you'd probably go for this one anyway if you could afford it, because it's going to be the best one in terms of the features that it's got and probably the technology and everything in it. And you might say, well, actually, I might as well have a camera or a screen in every room. So I don't know where it fits in terms of, you know, the rest of it, because if most people are then buying this version, then most people have got screens. They've got an Echo with a screen. And that's the thing. It's like you've lost that whole uniqueness for me of Alexa, which was which was its voice capability. It was that voice. It's the voice in the air. It was that ability to walk. I mean, it's really cool where in our setup now where I can pretty much walk around the house, and I can walk up the, I can even walk up the staircase to some extent, and just shout out, you know, Echo, turn on this, or Echo, do this, Echo, boil the kettle or something, and it gets done. And it's like, it's amazing. You actually forget that the voice. I remember when we were on holiday in Ireland, and I was almost like, you know, almost wanted to shout out to her name. Or in the hotel room in Atlanta last week, it's like you just get used to that being there, you know. I'm the opposite way
because I'm like, I just raise my wrist and I've got it there.
That's true.
And it's like, I don't need to, like, an Apple Watch is cheaper than one of these devices.
Yeah, true.
Like, an Apple Watch is £220, and that gives me all of that stuff in every room. I don't need to spend, like, if I wanted to put one in every room, how much is that going to cost? Over $1,000 easily.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't put my phone on silent. Sorry.
God, what, I thought there was a starling in my ear.
Yeah, it's my Star Trek communicator ringtone. And you know, it's got the camera in it, it's got voice call, it's got the video calling. But again, I'd never want to make a video call or voice call where I have to stay in one room. That's basically, you've given me a landline back. I don't want that.
To be honest, I don't like video calling. I don't like calling anyone. I don't like speaking. But I don't. The problem I have with these things is that I don't really want my house to be filled with cameras and microphones. Like, not to be paranoid. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be interested in hacking into my thing and listening to me. And it isn't even that thing that bothers me about it so much as Amazon's in the business of trying to sell you shit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how they make their money. And do I trust them enough to put cameras in every room of my house? I personally don't. Some people do. In the same way that I would never put any Google Home device in my house, because even though they might not listen to anything, they might. And I'm not going to take the risk. Apple's one of the few companies that I would trust with that stuff, because their business model is such that they literally don't want that information, and they have a very clear privacy stance that most others don't. But even then, I still wouldn't want an Apple camera in room of my house, I don't think. I wouldn't want it to always be there. Like, I don't mind having it on my wrist, because I know it's not listening to me all the time, because the battery would die, because it's got a tiddly little battery. So I feel more comfortable with that. But just from a basic privacy stance, I just don't like the idea of having a camera in every single part of my house, or a thing that can always listen to me when I speak out. I mean, also, how do people with families who have someone called Alexa in them, how do they cope? How does that work?
In terms of what?
Can you change their name?
Oh, I see. Sorry. Well, yes, of course.
Yeah,
yes,
you're going to constantly shout out to your kid, do your homework, and then she's going to come and going, I don't know what you mean. Like, how? Like, Siri is bad. No, I find it bizarre in this day and age that we can't change the names things.
Yeah, you can. You can on Alexa. You can change, I think it's Amazon, Echo, obviously.
You can't, like, enter your own, though.
No, and you can. And the latest one they did was computer. So, like Star Trek, you can say, computer, turn on the lights, which I thought was, which I would do.
Siri would do,
but the kids are so used to it now that I'd hear was them going, shouting the same name out 50 times because it wouldn't respond, and trying to get them to understand that it's changed. But no, you can't enter your own.
I find that odd because there was a Windows Media Player update for Windows XP back in 2000, maybe? I forget. Right. And that let you control it with anything. And being an immature child at the time, I set mine to be like, shitface or something. Or bitch, or I can't remember. It'd be like, hey, shitface, play my playlist. And it would do it. And it was great. So, that technology has existed for so long. Like, if Siri can detect every single word I say, and it can take from a mangled mess that I give it, like, oh, you want to do this complex thing. Like, the fact that I don't have to say a specific phrase, I can string it in any... I don't understand why I can't change the name of it to be, you know, something different. I find that particularly odd with the Alexa, which has already got, like, all of the text-based stuff, because the whole thing is, like, text-based for all the development.
Yeah.
Like, Siri, to an extent, has a bit more difference with stuff. But even then, like with HomeKit, I can give a name to my, like, specific name to my lights. Like, I could call them Ben's Amazing Lights, and it would know what I'm talking about. So there's no reason you can't change the name.
There shouldn't be. I'm guessing it's a brand. It might be a branding thing. It might be because a lot of people might rename their Echo to be Siri. And so they can say, hey.
Yeah, that's true.
They could say, hey, Dingus. Or they could actually, you know, change it to hey as two words. It might allow, if it allowed two words.
Hey.
Yeah, hey, hey, hey.
Okay,
hey ho, Siri. Oh.
The it's funny you're saying about being able to, I don't know if it still works at the moment, but for the launch of the Lego Batman movie, because Siri was the voice of the computer, it was the voice of the Bat computer, and so they did a thing where you could say either hey computer or hey pooter.
Yeah,
which is what
cool.
Batman always goes, hey pooter. And it would then answer you in like funny ways, like it'd be like, you're not Batman, this isn't the Batcave.
Yeah, cool.
Like it had like all these little branded things, which is quite fun. And for a while you could just, whenever you said that, it would,
it's gonna be interesting to see what they do. If there is going to be a Siri 2, which I hope there will be, and if there is going to be a device or whatever it is, it's going to be an interesting few months anyway with everything that's going on with iPads, and should be cool to see what gets announced.
I don't know what they're going to do. I can see them doing a standalone device, because we've been talking about it for ages, and I can see the benefit of it.
Yeah.
But I also think that they've got other devices that are much better, and Tim Cook's said as much when he's been like, we don't think constraining our assistant to a single room is great when you can have her on your wrist all the time.
Yeah,
but then that could also be the Steve Jobs thing of saying, like, you know, video on the iPod, that's a stupid idea, we'll never do that. And
exactly.
6 months later, here's a video iPod. So, yeah,
for me, for me, it would be nice if there was just a bit more connectivity between things. So it's that classic thing of, you know, right now being able to say, you know, hey Siri, play Batman movie on the in the living room, and then it just comes on, you know, comes on the Apple TV. It's that sort of thing. Or, hey Siri, find me some restaurants nearby, and send it to my iPad, or send it to my, you know, OzPad, or send it to my MacBook, or whatever. Just having that connectivity with everything, so that. And like the Sonos being able to say, can you play some, you know, play some dinner music in the dining room in the kitchen, and it will just get it. And it gets the context. The thing that annoys me with Echo is she's not very good. Well, she's useless at context in terms of, you know, you have to say, Echo, turn on. I have to say, you know, Echo, turn off the girl's light, or Echo, turn off Leo's light. And I have to do all these different sequences. It would be good to say, Echo, turn off the girl's light and Leo's, you know, and it would get that context and understand it, rather than having to do the initiation command every time. And I know it's hard stuff and it's complicated, but that would be quite cool. You know, if you could say, you know, hey Siri, what's the weather? You know, weather's always a crappy one, but you know, when is Guardians of the Galaxy playing, or where is it playing? And she obviously is going to tell you that, and you could say, send it to my Apple Maps, or send it to my map, or something. Send me the route. And she gets that that's what you're talking about. She sends you the route to the cinema, comes up on your phone, and it's ready to go when you are, sort of thing. Or send me the route when I get in my car. You know, and it's got that whole... It knows when I connect to my car Bluetooth, I connect to my car Bluetooth, and pop, the route comes up. It's that. I know that's complicated stuff. It's lots of linking of things, and there's lots of user journeys and stuff.
It does that to an extent.
But the technology's
already
there. I guess so. But that's what I want more. I mean,
all of that stuff actually exists, they just haven't bothered putting it
exactly
together.
Exactly,
so for right
now
there's already that, I forget what they call it, when you ask it something and then you do like a follow-up query. So if you say something like, what's the weather today, and it'll tell you, and then say, and what about tomorrow, and it knows you're still talking about the weather. I think that works for a lot of queries, like they've sort of got that in. But stuff like saying, can you play this on these speakers, that's just basic laziness on part of AirPlay not being part of HomeKit.
Right,
just annoying. No reason that should not work.
I've got to tell you something. My phone's just picked up what I said just now. So
you did use the word a lot.
I know. So on the screen, on my screen right now, I've got the Siri screen up, and it says, hey Dingus, I'm not going to say it. So it says, hey Dingus, what's the weather? When is the Guardians of the Galaxy play my Apple Maps or something, send me the route? And she gets that that's what you talk about, the route to the cinema, or send me the route when I get in my car. And it's got the bits that I know it's complicated. Starbucks, lots of Lincoln, but there are, yeah, I guess. So, but that's what I want, boring. And the response is, who, me? I've just taken a screenshot. That's awesome.
I would love it if when you next get in your car, it's like, okay, Guardians of the Galaxy is 25 minutes away. It's got it perfectly.
You're like, what the hell? Yeah, that was funny. I just looked at my screen and there was all this text coming up, and I'm like, oh my God.
I heard it activate. Because oh, did you? A few times. And I don't think there's any problem with saying, hey, Siri.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the interesting thing.
iOS 10.
Well, that's the interesting... Have you,
or iOS 9, even.
You've got an Echo, have you? Or not?
No.
Okay, so the interesting thing with the
I've
Echo
not got
is...
Any of the Echo stuff.
Is when the adverts come on, obviously they say, hey, Dingus, and they say something. And when they say it, the lights go. You know, if you're in the vicinity of... If it's being played in the vicinity of one of these devices, the lights will go on the top. You know, it picks up the activation word. But it doesn't say anything or do anything else. So it's as if they've tuned
it. You know how they
it.
Do that?
How?
I can tell you how they do that, because I worked for a company that does a lot of similar stuff.
Okay.
The advert will have a sound in the front of it that's very high-pitched that you can't hear, but that the device can hear, and it'll tell it, this is an advert, don't activate when you hear it.
Because it never does. It never
does. And it'll hear it and activate, because... That's part of the security system in it, so that whenever it hears the phrase to show you that it's listening, it'll flash.
Yep.
So that's why it does the flashing, but it's already been disabled by software in advance.
That's
very
cool.
They do the same thing with every single cinema. When you go and see a film, the film has information like that all the way through it that you can't hear. And it's so that if it gets pirated, they can instantly see which cinema it was that leaked it.
Oh, wow. I did not know
that. In fact,
that.
Most things you listen to, most TV stuff, that there is a huge amount of hidden audio data in most things. In fact, it's been in the news a lot this last week because there's some adverts that are doing it because some apps are requesting microphone permission so they can then track you across app installs and across different things, because they literally, your TV or your app, you could be... using an app, it could be playing a sound out the speaker that you can't hear, but other devices in the vicinity can hear it to know where you are and pick stuff up. It's a very tricky area.
That is interesting.
But I bet that's... I don't know if that's how they do it.
It must be, because it's never... It never activates. It never, ever activates.
Which is what Xbox should have done when they had that advert where it's like, turn on Xbox and play a game. And then everyone's Xbox is turned off.
Well, there was that guy, wasn't it, who named himself. There was the video online of the guy that was like, Xbox shut down or Xbox turn off or something. That's what his gamer tag was. And then he would go up to someone in Call of Duty and shoot them in the face, you know, a normal game. And they'd go, oh, for God's sake, you know, piss off, Xbox shut down. And then suddenly their Xbox would come up with, are you sure? And obviously they didn't shut down. They'd come up with a warning or whatever. I don't have a Kinect, so I don't know. But you'd hear the audio go, oh, can you piss off, Xbox shut down?
Block,
and then they're like,
no,
as they realise.
I remember listening to a podcast a while back before Siri was like, hey, Siri, send my mum a message telling her I'm sorry. And then the people were laughing, and then he's like, yes, send it. So that he'd get the confirmation afterwards.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was pretty funny.
Oh, God. Right, what else are we going to talk about? iMac repair.
Oh, I did want to say, just one thing before I talk about that. Okay. I went to the Apple store to drop off my iMac. And the interesting thing was, there's a Samsung store in the shopping centre that I go. And so I walk past that most of the time. And it's always funny that the Samsung store always has more employees than it.
Yeah.
There's like customers, there might be two or three, but there'll be like five staff just loitering around. Whereas the Apple store is always just rammed full of people, just constantly.
Exactly.
It's never empty. Even on the quietest day that I went, when the store had no one, the Apple store still had about 20 people, I counted, like the middle of the day on a Tuesday. But I wanted to say one thing about the S8. Mentioned it briefly the other week, but we not used one or didn't watch the keynote, so we didn't know anything about it. I have to say, I love their adverts. Their adverts have been really, really good. Have you seen them?
I haven't.
They basically, the first one I saw shows like, it kept showing phones.
Yeah.
And like just a standard phone design, like basically an iPhone outline. And it would show it like in all different contexts, like on shopping signs and like on a road. This is a phone, this is a phone. Like someone drawing one, this is a phone. And then they're like, not anymore. And then they show like their new one where it's got like none of the sides. And like the sides literally broke away from the side of it to then reveal that it's edge-to-edge screen.
It's just a
really nice advert. It's like, oh, that is clever. And it's like, this is a real unboxing or something like that was the tagline for it. You know, getting rid of the sides. And then at the cinema the other day, they had another advert where it showed the phone like the new S8, but it looked like the S7, like it had the sides. And then there's like a video playing and like someone punching the side of the screen. And every time it punched it, a bit of it would fly off until the whole thing was revealed as being like this edge-to-edge thing. And then it's like the infinity display, unbox your content or something, and spinning around. And I was like, these are really good adverts. It looks really nice. And even like the name of it, the infinity display, is sort of like a very Apple
kind of thing.
But like their advertising spot on, it looks great. I don't know how well it's doing. The advert looks good. I've seen adverts for it everywhere, like all the way through the shopping centre. There's like, get the new SA on contract at Carphoneware. Buy it here. There seems to be like a real big push for it, advertising-wise, everywhere. I keep seeing it all the
time. Yeah, be interesting.
I just really like the advert.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Apple come back with in terms of the... I mean, there's been a few leaks of supposed parts, and then someone did a rendering of what it could look like from the parts. And it looks like it looks like a sort of an edge-to-edge screen, and then
same thing, really.
Yeah, and the sort of speaker has been moved up with all of the sensors into some little tiny area at the top, sort of like an inch wide, which would be the only sort of black bit or something, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
On and then the rest would be screen, and then the cameras.
Because the S8, vertical. You still have the chin and the head. Like, yes. You still have the little bit bow right at the top and a bow right at the bottom. Whereas the iPhone is supposed to be. The whole thing is screen, apart from a little tiddly bit in the middle at the top. Like, pretty much, if you looked at your current phone, where the time is displayed at the status bar, it's like that. Just cut that out, so you could still have the Wi-Fi stuff on the left and the battery stuff on the right. It's just the time bit, which is, how it would work with backwards compatibility of apps. Like, they'd probably be blown up to the full screen, and then you just lose that bit. But it'd be interesting to see how it's going to work in any form of compatibility mode.
Yeah, and
intrigued.
And also, if the home button is going to be on the front and it is going to be at the bottom, it's going to be interesting to see, because you could argue with OLED's got the capability to have holes in it. You know, you can have odd-shaped screens, and you can have holes in screens and things. So in theory...
Yeah.
You could have a screen that's full height, but it would have this sort of null area in the middle, because that's where the button is effectively, because you're not going to make necessarily the button a screen itself. However, what you could do is you could say, because there's these rumors of this sort of control area, this almost like a touch bar area.
A touch bar.
Yeah, you could basically
would be the perfect name for it.
Exactly. So you could actually say, well, the bottom of the screen now is this touch bar. The center area is obviously the home button. And you've got space at the sides, either side, to have other stuff. And so that's how you'd get round any app issues with, because you could say, well, that is a separate, it would be an extension or something, wouldn't it? Within the app, it wouldn't necessarily be part, the normal app would be compatibility size, but there would be this extension that would allow these buttons at the bottom. So that's a reasonable way to get
pretty
around.
Pretty much how the iPhone 5 update happened, where compatibility mode was, it just got black box top and bottom.
Exactly.
Unless it had been built for iPhone 5 and then you got thing up. I was more thinking about the top, like if they have that little bit that dips down.
Yeah.
Then what do you... Because some apps go right to the top of the screen, and whereas most use the status bar to get rid of the time.
Yeah.
Although that's a useful thing to have when your app says.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. We'll see what happens. But anyway, so I went to the Apple Store, and the reason was to get my iMac repaired, because originally I thought to myself, and we discussed this a few times now, I've got the Mac Pro and it's wonderful, it's doing a great job. But my iMac, I was like, well, I can finally sort this out. And originally I was going to open it up myself and clean it, because I was pretty sure that the reason fan was full of pug hair, what my entire house is full of. And so I thought, I'll just open it up and do it. And then I got the iFixit page up, and it was like, this is a 2 to 3 hour task, and you'll need several tools, and you will need to break the adhesive on your screen and then reapply it. I was like, no. So the context is, the iMac is 3 years old at this point. It was the original 5K iMac. I didn't buy Apple Care for it, so it's outside of its 1 year thing that they do. It's outside of the 2 years of normal the UK gets. So it's completely outside, and I thought, well, I'll take it in, I'll ask them to open it up, basically clean it out, maybe replace the fan, and if the GPU is blown, find out how much it's going to cost them to fix it. Because I was thinking, if it's less than like £250, I guess I might as well. And my idea has been, because there's no new Mac Mini, I'm going to have this iMac basically run it into the ground. It'll be under my stairs and will act as my home server. Until such a time as a new Mac Mini comes out that is more powerful. Because it's got like the maximum i7 upgrade and everything. A really good processor, which I need for like encoding video and stuff. So I don't really want to just replace it with a current Mac Mini. But, so that's what I'm going to do with it. Anyway, I took it in, and I'm like, so here's the situation. You know, it's been dying repeatedly when it's, you know, overheating, blah, 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 blah. And he sort of looked through it, and he did a few things to try and see, like, the shutdown log to see how many times it, like, shut down itself and the reason why, because it'll tell you. And he's going through the logs, and there was nothing odd in there because the last time it had happened had been like 3 or 4 months prior, because I've just been running it with maximum fans the whole time in order to keep it running. So I couldn't really prove the problem. But he was like, fine, we'll get it repaired for you. He's like, you bought it online, didn't you? I was like, yeah. He's like, okay, you're protected by consumer law for 6 years, and we'll just fix it under that. And I was
wow.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. He's like, yeah, if you buy it in the store, it's 2 years. But if you buy it online, 6 years. So we'll fix that for you. What I'll do, and this is amazing because, as I say, there's no AppleCare or anything like that, but he couldn't even prove the problem. He would have been well within his rights to say, you know what, no, I can't see that there's a problem. But instead he's like, we'll replace the power supply and we'll replace the fan because that's probably the problem, and we'll do that for you. And he's like, are you planning on selling it? Because I told him that I'd bought the Mac Pro. And he's like, are you planning on selling this on afterwards? And I was like, well, I was thinking about it, but I've got a problem with the stand because I've got all scratches over it, where I put one of these light packs on the back and remove these big scratches, which, you know, want to knock off like five. And he was like, well, why don't you just replace the stand? I'm like, okay. And he's like, I'll get a price for it. He's like, stand will cost £30. And if we do it at the same time, then we won't for the maintenance because we're already opening it up and doing stuff.
Perfect.
So I was like, okay. So for £30, I got a brand new stand, everything cleaned out and a new fan and a new thing. And that was on a Thursday at about midday. I dropped it off. And the next day he rung me at 10 in the morning. And he's like, oh, hey, you came in a few days ago with your iMac. And I was like, that was yesterday. He's like, oh, yeah, so it was. Anyway, it's all done. And originally he said it would take about a week because they had to order parts in, but they evidently came in much quicker. He's like, oh, yeah, it's done. You can come pick it up. We did have a slight problem. When we were taking it apart, we accidentally bent some of the pins on one of the connectors. So we've put a new logic board in for you as well.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
So in the end, he's like, the entire bottom of it was just full of like dust and hair. Like the vents at the bottom were a little bit blocked. So the full work that I paid £30 for was a brand new stand for the whole iMac. They gave it a deep clean inside, put a new fan in, put a new logic board in, all done within 24 hours.
That's pretty good.
With no AppleCare.
Their support stuff is pretty... I get the AppleCare stuff only because I'm paranoid about things. I want the protection. Or I feel like I need
to. I did for the Mac Pro.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I've had a watch replaced where it was out of the supposed... Because, you know, we do live in this world where we think we get a year's warranty. And actually, yeah, I mean, Apple do offer this two-year thing. But also, the consumer... Not that I've read up a huge amount about it, but I read about it last year. There is this sort of consumer law which says that something should be fit for purpose within 6 years. You know, a reasonable lifetime, which is considered to be about 6 years. So, you know, if you buy a TV, it should last 6 years. And if it breaks down after 3 years, even though a company can say, well, you know, we only offer a year's warranty, there is this law that says, no, it needs to be fit for purpose for longer than that. So it's interesting that they're doing that because, I had two watches repaired. I think I had a phone repaired that had an accelerometer issue, although to be fair, that was within a year's warranty. But I did have my old MacBook Pro, my 13-inch MacBook Pro, had that screen issue, you know, with the anti-reflective coating. And they did like a recall repair on that. So if anybody's got that where your screen looks like it's peeling, mine was around the camera, but other people have had it around the sides of the screen. Then there is a thing with Apple where you can literally send it off and 2 days later they send you back and I got a brand new screen, which was great for selling it because, you know, I could sell it with an immaculate screen, which was cool. Yeah. That's cool.
That's like I got my wife's iPhone replaced. Just it had an issue with the battery charging and just went in and explained it. And they're like, yep. And I've had like laptops where... they've, you know, had a problem, taken it all apart, repaired it, given it a brand new key just to make it look nicer.
Mm.
And I posted it on Twitter and someone that works at an Apple store was like, oh yeah, we love jobs like this. But, you know, it take a bit of pride in your work and we don't want to return it looking like a piece of shit. Like if your keyboard's all disgusting because you've been using it for like 3 years, we'll replace it because we want it to look nice for you to love your product. And it's like, there's not many people that would do that.
Not at all.
It's definitely a cultural thing that their support staff are good.
Yeah.
So I was very impressed. I got the AppleCare for the Mac Pro because I'd heard that the because of the thermal heat thing.
Yeah.
Quite often the GPUs burn out quicker than they should, just because nowadays most things just they don't use both, and it's not designed for that. So I thought, seeing as I did it through my wife's student account and got a discount anyway, it's like, I'll pay the extra to get AppleCare this time. Although I probably didn't need to. Like I said,
exactly.
It seemed to be pretty good. As long as you order online, though, that's
yes.
the crucial thing, that the 6 years is if it's bought online, not yeah. if it's bought in a shop, then it's 2 years.
So, yeah, definitely. I mean, the other interesting thing you talk about going into an Apple store and it's packed. So I was in Atlanta last week and found out there was an Apple store nearby, which is always about a 10-minute walk. So I walked down to this mall on a Sunday, I think it was, went to the Apple store, which was rammed. I mean, it was a big Apple store. I know they're all probably similar designs, but it reminded me of the one in Basingstoke, actually, in Festival Place, but very, very similar to that. So really nice and big, absolutely rammed full of people. And then I walked, I think it was on the same level, but I came out of there. I think I bought a little 29-watt power adapter, which is actually designed for the MacBook, the normal MacBook with the USB-C, but it works with a MacBook Pro. Just charges it a little slower, but it's tiny and nice and compact, yeah. and it had the American plug on it. And it's just nice to have in my bag, so I don't have to carry the bigger one. So anyway, coming out, I saw a Microsoft store, which I've never seen before. So I go into the Microsoft store, and it was empty. There was literally six people in it. I think they were all staff. And it was probably about the same size as the Apple store inside. There was a guy playing VR, but he was staff. And there were all these Surface books and the Surface Studio. And so that's what intrigued me. I thought I wanted to have a quick look at the Surface Studio. So there was nobody around it. You know, there's no one in the store. But the Surface Studio is interesting because, to say it in a nutshell, the design's lovely. I mean, it's very Apple-like in terms of its design. It's high quality. There's nothing plasticky or rubbish about it. It's very smooth way that the screen, it looks a bit like an iMac in terms of the screen, you know, up in front of you, but you can sort of touch the screen and drag it down and it goes into almost like an easel-style drawing board. And the idea is that it would then cover your keyboard, you know, it goes over the top of the keyboard and then you'd start drawing. Or you can, keyboards are wireless, you can move it anyway. So the design was lovely, but Windows is just terrible. I mean, it's just terrible. And I fired up this like graphics package and the stylus is like magnetic and sort of clicks to the side, which is quite nice. So you sort of get the stylus. It feels a bit like the pencil, but not as nice. But the lag is appalling. I mean, I tried to do a drawing and it's, you know, it's one of those things where I tried to do a quick curve and I got that horrible curve and then the straight line thing where it caught up, and you can move the pen across the paper, the screen, and you can literally see the line being drawn a half an inch to an inch behind you, depending on how fast you do it. And I just don't see that with the iPad Pro, or, you know, either of the iPad Pros. So it's a real shame because they've got this fantastic design and it's a real Apple-like design. But there was two things. One was the fact that it was just terrible, probably because it's running Windows and the way it's been implemented. But the second thing is just that whole, I started to appreciate this whole concept of why they don't do touchscreen computers. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right to suddenly be in drawing board mode. I totally get this whole rumor that they could be going down, which is the Cintiq type thing, where you'd have your iMac or you'd have your MacBook Pro plugged into your external monitor like we've got and I've got, and it's in front of me right now, and I've got my keyboard or mouse in front of me. And I could totally get this concept of having like an iPad 12-inch flat on the surface in front of me, or even a bigger iPad, if they did a bigger iPad for this specific purpose. That's a self-contained iPad. You can pick it up and walk away, and it's a normal iPad. But if you plug it in via a high-speed cable, or maybe it uses a high-speed Wi-Fi link, or whatever the technology is, it suddenly becomes this second screen, but at super, you know, not like Duet Display or any of these ones that try and do it themselves, or Air Display. It's literally, you know, it's at a hardware level talking to this other device, and it's now acting as a second screen that's fully touch-based, that you're seeing what's going on your MacBook Pro or MacBook or iMac or whatever. So you've got Photoshop running, let's say. This could either be the drawing that you're working on, or it could be a really enhanced tablet display. That I can see happening, but not... It sort of put the whole... Just looking at it and trying it and manipulating it just felt like I wouldn't want to work like that.
All of these things are very specialist. Like they're aimed at a specific use case of designers that still use hand-drawn, which
exactly
is a group that is probably getting smaller every year as more people go completely digital. And, you know, I imagine a lot of people today starting out doing design aren't starting by drawing, a sweeping statement, but it's just going to be the case that as people come into this world using touchscreens and using their fingers and stuff. They're not using tools as much. They're going that way instead and doing things digitally. Like, I can't draw anything. I've always been terrible at drawing, but I can do a passable, you know, interfaces and stuff in Photoshop. I just don't see this as being a market that Apple really cares about that much. The Mac Pro, we saw what happened to sort of like professional, all kinds of stuff. And this is an even small subset of those people. Like, it's literally professional graphic designers who use pencils and pens. Like, I could see them maybe releasing an app whereby you can use the iPad Pro as a wireless, you know, drawing tablet. I should say exactly like a Cintiq. I don't think they'd do much more than that, like having it as an experience, because they don't really want to go down that route, apart from maybe the touch bar, which hasn't been well received.
No.
Generally. So it all seems odd to me. But the Microsoft Studio, whatever it's called, the desk that, the screen that goes down. I had a friend that was like, oh, I'd love that. It'd be so great for like playing some games on and like being able to control things with your hands. It's like, I could maybe see that. but also, you're going to get smudges everywhere. Yeah. And like, that is really designed for like, it's a drafting table. It's designed for like architects or designers. It's not designed for everyone. And so when people look at that and go, this is what Apple should be doing, it's like, no, they shouldn't.
No.
That's exactly not what they should be doing. Like, would I use that? No. That's not going to help me with Xcode, having it be able to touch the bloody thing. Like, I guess the simulator could then be touch-enabled, but, you know, I could just plug my phone in and do it that way. For everyday people, they don't need to touch the screen. Certainly not your main screen. If you want to touch your screen, get an iPad.
And the other,
that's what it's for.
The other thing is, which I've now completely forgotten what I was going to say, about touch bar screens. I can't remember what it was else until I do. I hate it when that happens. And then it'll come back to you at Christmas.
The joys of old age.
Unknown bruises and forgetting what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Just finding weird bruises on me and going, what the hell?
That's your wife beating you at night.
For snoring.
That's what that is.
Exactly.
I started getting those after I got married. Like, why haven't you put the bins out?
What else have we got to talk about?
We had a question, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Wrote to us on Twitter and then asked us a specific question, which was...
Yes, about how we got started.
Origin stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've got, what, half an hour, let's say. Do you want to go first, or...?
I guess. I will, just in case you lose your memory further.
Yes, go on then.
So my origin story isn't really that interesting, I don't think, but I'll tell it anyway. after like school and university and that kind of stuff, uni, I did politics and philosophy, useful for a career in IT. but while I was at uni, I was in like lots of societies and stuff, and I was sort of dabbling with building websites. I think I started learning like HTML4 when I was, so I'd done it for a while and built like little shitty websites on GeoCities. And then at uni, I built websites for other, you know, societies like the university newspaper and radio station. And then I took a job at Staples while I was at uni, and I was one of the sales people that comes up to you to annoy you, like when you're looking at a laptop camera and say, can I help you at all? Can I sell that for you? which was fun in a sense. And while I was doing that, eventually I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. And so I set up my own company where I was going to build my own computers and stuff for people and do repairs. And it basically ended up with me touring around Devon, like going to mostly elderly people's houses and doing things like installing Service Pack 2 for Windows XP or installing a printer, that kind of thing. And so I did that for a while. And then I did like a few little websites for people. I had an idea in the summer holidays to go around a few of the computer repair shops near me, and I would go up to them and say, if you need a website built for people, people probably come in and ask for them, then you can pass their details on to me. And so I was building like really shitty websites for like barely any money at all, like 40 quid for a website. It's awful when I look back at that now and think, Jesus. I remember spending 3 weeks building a website once and I got 40 quid for it. That's like, why did I do that?
Did you wait to the end to invoice, or did you get installments?
I got paid about 30 days later. That's the worst of it as well. So I was doing that, and then when I finished at uni, I didn't really do much in the summer holidays at that point. My girlfriend at the time had got a job doing stuff for a medical company where she basically had to phone up people and ask if they were going to like some road show and they needed some more help. And so I did that for a while, and that was good money. It's like 12 quid an hour or something. I just had to sit at home and phone people with Skype and ask them if they were going to this thing and yes or no. And then after a while, I realized I could automate it and just make a spreadsheet macro that just filled in the answers randomly on a good distribution curve and not do the phone calls and still get paid for it. So I did that for a week. And then I started building my own website and my own portfolio and stuff, building little tools. And then I applied for a job at called Spring Digital in London. And then I went for interview and then got given the job as a junior developer. And then I was there for maybe 3 years, 2.5 years, something like that. And I got promoted to developer, senior developer, and then development manager, which was good. And it was mainly just building PHP websites, bit of HTML and JavaScript, that kind of stuff. But after a while, I wasn't really enjoying it there anymore and could have been better. So then I took a job with another agency called Pod One in London, which was a complete awful company. I've never been to a place where there's so many people doing nothing. Like, I literally spent 3 months building some widget for some website because every day I'd have like 3 hour meetings with the client and so didn't actually do any work. And the development manager at the time was like doing a psychology course. And he was like hardly ever there. And if someone asked me what they should be doing, because I was supposed to be like the next senior person, and I tell them, he'd then go apeshit when he got back to the office and tell me that I shouldn't be telling people what to do.
Goodness sake.
And so around that time, the iPhone had come out and the App Store was starting up. And I was still doing a bit of freelance work on the side. Like I had the occasional small client where I was, you know, maybe my websites cost £100 then rather than 40. Oh, so bad. But I was doing little bits here and there. And then eventually I'd had enough and I quit. And I was like, I'm going to build apps. And I had no idea how to build apps. But one of the good things that they had at Pod One was that the leaving presents were pretty good. You got like 80 quid worth of stuff when you left, which is odd. So they basically asked you what you wanted. And I was like, I want a pair of Converse. And I want these two books on Objective-C. And that's what I got. So literally, on the last day, I got given this pair of shoes. And then a book on Coco and a book on Objective-C.
Wow.
So then I quit. And then I'm at home, now unemployed, basically, apart from a little bit of PHP freelance work. And I was doing that. And I was messing around with a few little apps. And I built a few like really bad like HTML5 phone apps, like wrapped in a little shitty container. Like they were like literally HTML pages that were in a wrapper. And then this bizarre opportunity came up when one of my friends that followed me on Twitter, Martin, someone had asked his agency from the Gadget Show on Channel 5. They were basically looking for a freelancer to build an app because they were doing a segment where they were going to get a company to build an app and a freelancer to build an app to sort of basically show that anyone could build apps and this is the new thing.
Yeah.
And I'd been on TV a couple of times because when I was at Spring Digital, randomly the office got phoned and working lunch on the BBC needed someone technical to explain why when someone bought something online, if the server crashed halfway through, you could still be charged, but you wouldn't get what you'd paid for.
Right.
Because there was like a big scandal in, and so I'd been on a few like things like that, like talking head type thing for 20 seconds, and expert said this, and so my friend was like, oh, Ben's been on TV, he does apps, you should ask him. And so I went to this meeting in a pub with like some Channel 4 like producer, and he's like, yeah, so we need this app, it'll be in about a month. Like, it was a basic Twitter app where it asked you questions like, what are you doing, and then you'd have like 20 options, and then it would compose a tweet and send it for you.
Right.
And I had no idea how to do it at all. I'd not built a proper app, and I was like, yes, I can do this for you, no problem. It was unpaid because it was just like a promotional thing. I was like, yes, this will be fine. And so I did it, and I just literally hacked this together. Like, I can only begin to imagine what that code would look like now if I still had it. But it was called Social Beacon, and it got number 4 on the App Store.
Wow.
In the free App Store charts. It didn't do as well as their other one, which was like a bike game that the company built. That was a game rougher than a Twitter app.
Yeah.
So it was always going to do better. But that got much bigger. So I did that. And then I got like loads of people just emailing me constantly. Like my website inquiries went through the roof until the biggest one was Sainsbury's. No, not Sainsbury's, sorry, Nectar card came to me and said, oh yeah, we saw you on the TV.
Oh, cool.
And so we thought we'd come to you. And I was like, oh my God, how have I gone from building these little websites to now being asked by like a huge company in the UK to build their app?
Yeah,
and I built them a demo app that was just awful. Like it had cover flow, for Christ's sake, like to look through offers. You swiped this horrible cover flow interface. It was terrible. And so I built them the little demo, and then I came in for a meeting, and then they wanted me to work on site. So then I worked in London in their offices for maybe a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
And again, it was like a big, huge company where nothing gets done. So a lot of stand-up meetings. And I spent an awful lot of time building my own apps during that time. Like I built a security app where you took your photo and stuff. And I was sort of building that in the office at the same time that I should have been working on the Nectar app, just because I was building it so much quicker than anyone else was doing stuff. So like I had a lot of time on my hands. A lot of this is very dubious, I realise, in retrospect.
I think there's a limit
and
to
eventually
them being able to do anything anyway.
Yeah, I would think so. They're probably not listening.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. But anyway, when I left there eventually, because I was like, I don't want to become... then I had quite a few more inquiries, and I worked for a company called Expense Magic for a while in their office, I think for about 9 months, and that was pretty good. But at the time, I was also doing stuff like little third-party tools for a company called Gowalla, which was like Foursquare, like a little travel thing. And that was just in my spare time. I was building fun little apps. And I built one called Highlights, which showed you interesting places near you, like use GPS, and then it would use their database to basically tell you, here's some interesting things near you. And that got promoted by Apple, bizarrely. Oh. I got this really sketchy-looking email from an Apple address. I mean, it looked like something like your mum would send, like back in the 90s. Like, it was all rich text and, like, red fonts, and it was awful. And it's like, it's the App Store team, and we might want to feature your app, so please supply these assets at these sizes in case we do. And then they did, and it was like the promoted, you know, app of the week for the iPad for like 2011.
Oh, wow.
And that, yeah, you'd think it would be great. I was like, oh my God. And that was on the same day, it was my birthday. And on my birthday, that happened. And the same day, Boris Johnson tweeted happy birthday at me. Nice as well. It's a weird birthday, that one. So I did that, and it didn't actually make that much money. Like it made like £1,500 during that week period, 2 weeks. Like it, and it was like a 99p app. Yeah. So it basically got downloaded like 1,500 times, which isn't many for like having, like if you got that featured spot today, that would be crazy time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't at the time, because barely anyone had an iPad, which is how it got updated. Got featured easily. So I did that, and then I quit Expense Magic, and then I was just freelancing again, and I had a number of different contracts and stuff. And then I was building my own apps, and I built Wallaby was like my biggest one, which was a company I just poured a ton of money into. To build this game, and then it had server problems, and I ran that for 3 years, and then eventually sold it to another company who's just relaunched it. And then I've just been freelancing ever since. So it's really just been a case of sitting at home working on various different projects. An odd progression from doing politics and philosophy to doing basic websites, getting a job in London as a website developer, doing freelance work on the side, and then a string of fortunately lucky events that got me to appear on television and then build some big apps, which then meant my portfolio was pretty impressive. And then I could just, now I'm in a very lucky position of picking and choosing my clients and saying no to more of them than I say yes to, which is wonderful, because I can be a complete dick to people, which I enjoy doing. Like, literally, I tweeted this, and I think you favourited or commented. I had a client this week who I've worked with a few times before, and they emailed me saying, oh, I want you to do this, like 3 days of work. And also, would it be all right if we pay in 30 days rather than your 7-day time? or could you split the invoice up? And I just replied back saying, no.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't. I'm not a credit lender. Like, I think you should pay as soon as I send you my invoice. 7 days is really for people that are international, where it takes, you know, a few days for money to be transferred, or where you have an accountancy department that has to go through.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a startup on your own, you're paying for it, then you'll pay for it when the invoice lands. So no, you can't pay in 30 days. And they're like, all right, can we have push notifications as well? I was like, yeah, extra half a day. So I ended up getting some more money for it. But it's nice being in a position where you can just turn around and say to people, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to do that. Whereas obviously when I was younger, I was willing to, you know, spend 3 weeks building a website for 40 quid. So the times have changed over those long 8 years.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So I hope that answers that question.
I think it does. So my story is similar in some ways. So I actually studied, I didn't go to university. So I came out of college, or I came out of school and college, where I did a computer studies course part-time and actually failed it, which is interesting. mainly because my end of year sort of project that I did was an adventure creator. And so I actually went and studied, I was actually studying CAD. I was studying drawing and I was studying architecture. So I did a building studies course, came out of college and just jumped into this building studies course, despite the fact that my qualifications weren't fantastic. I think it was, these are the days of CSEs. So I had a grade, I think I had a grade, but basically, you know, I got a couple of a few O-levels and mostly CSEs. So I studied building studies course for 2 years, where you go through all of this stuff to do with architecture, to do with building, to do with concrete, to do with structural mechanics, physics. There's all kinds of stuff in there, and I actually did really well because
nice.
Well, what was interesting was it was clear that school I was just a bit of a clown and didn't get it. You know, I wasn't stupid, but I just wasn't engaged enough. Whereas with this course, which was 2 years, full-time 2 years, it was amazing because everything was applied. You know, I was doing everything around building. It was all, I was learning structural mechanics and Newton loads and all these things, but it was for a reason. It wasn't just algebra for the sake of it. So I ended up getting like 90-odd percent in all my subjects and passed with flying colors and all this. And then the irony was when I got my certificate that I'd finished this course, I was talking to the lecturer and I said, yeah, it's amazing that, you know, I was saying exactly this. You know, I've done much better than I did at school because I only got a grade 2 CSE in maths at school. And he went, really? You shouldn't have been on this course if you had a grade 2 CSE. So I actually shouldn't have been on that course at all with the qualifications I had. But he obviously misunderstood me when I first joined. So basically, yeah.
That also happened to me at university. I should not have been doing politics and philosophy at
exactly
because you needed 2 A's and a B.
Yeah.
And I got an A, a B, and an E.
Exactly.
And I was sat in the lecture the first day and everyone around me is like, oh yeah, what did you get your A's in? And I was like,
so this, yeah, this came back to bite me a little bit, because what happened then is I got this qualification and then I think he's like, what do you want to do next? And I think, oh, I think I want to be an architect. You know, I really enjoyed doing all the drawing. I've still got my drawings, really enjoyed. It was all, you know, pen based. It was all tracing paper and pen and going off to the printers to get it printed on white paper and all this sort of stuff.
Nice.
And splicing in and drawing trees. And I loved it. Loved all that stuff. And so I wanted to be an architect. And so I started looking into that. And at the time it was Brighton was going to be the option because I was living in Crawley. And it was a polytechnic at the time. I think it's changed now. And I applied for this. It was the REBA course, which turned, you know, it's a 7-year course. And it was a big thing. And I was living at home and my parents weren't, well, you know, they were, I'd probably say middle class, but, you know, they weren't super well off. And it was a lot of money to pay out because there was potentially going to be no way for me to get a grant. And so I looked into this thing. Anyway, long story short, I applied and got turned down because there was like 900 people applying for 40 places. And they turned me down because of my school qualifications, which was the irony. So it did come back to bite me. But it was a blessing, obviously, in many ways. But, you know, I realized that this course, it dawned on me, this was going to be 7 years. This was a huge undertaking. And at the time, AutoCAD was around and the CAD stuff was around. But, you know, that technology was getting cheaper and easier for people to use. And obviously I was into computers. And so that was what I was then really interested in getting into. So I ended up getting a job doing space planning for a company in Crawley doing scanning CAD plans. So what you had to do is you had to take normal building plans. So you'd get these paper plans. and you'd have to trace them effectively with a digitizer, and you'd turn them into CAD drawings. Then you'd work out space analysis and all. So long story short, I do that for a few years. I get promoted a few times until I'm running a little team there for the CAD team. And then I go to work for, this was late 80s, early 90s. So yeah, it would have been early 90s. So then I start working for one of the suppliers. I leave that company because I just wasn't getting paid enough. And I end up working in London for the first time in Wapping Wall, which is now loads of residential places. And I think they filmed the great sewing bee there and all that sort of stuff, but basically used to be offices. And I worked for a company selling the software that the previous company wrote, which used AutoCAD and did space planning. And that's where I was coding at home. I had an Amiga and I had Commodore 64s and all that sort of stuff. And I was messing around with stuff at home. But this is where I started coding for work. And I wrote a little app that basically allowed estates teams within businesses to move people around and take care of their phone requirements and their desk requirements and everything. It actually worked by, I reverse engineered the database of the software of the company I used to work for. It was a DBF, you know, standard DBF database with all these DBA files. And I worked out how to connected that into Microsoft Access. And I worked out a way to hack it and reverse engineer it. And the beauty was that if you could hack it and change the values in the database, when you next loaded AutoCAD and loaded the software, everything would update from the database. So I wrote this really cool piece of software, which I thought was really, I can't remember what it was called now, Facility Planner, I think it was called, or something like that. And essentially, you'd get this display within this access screen of all of the desks on all the floors. And I could say, right, you know, Joe Bloggs on floor A wants to move from floor A to floor B. He needs this much space. He needs this equipment. He needs to do it at this time. And it would schedule that. It would create the tickets. It would take care of changing all the entries in the database and logging what needs to be done and generating any messages that need to be generated. And I think we were doing faxes at the time because the email wasn't that. But basically, then it would change the database. And then when you loaded the drawing, things would move around. It was quite nifty. And we actually produced it on these little floppy disks, little 3.5-inch floppy disks. And that's what you installed it from. And it had a little sticker on there that we generated. But anyway, that got me into all the coding stuff. Yeah, that got me into all the coding stuff. And then that's what made me... And my job there was like an account manager. I was sort of... I was selling the software. I was sales. But I was sort of a technical person because I could obviously use the software and show how the software worked. You know, show best practice and do training. But I was sort of responsible for generating a level of income for the business. It was a company called Facility Consult. And we worked in a Herman Miller showroom, which was quite nice. So we had all these great Herman Miller chairs, you know, Aeron chairs and everything, and desks. And when I left there, I actually took a desk with me. They let me take one. But anyway, so that was where I got into coding and really wanted to do coding. So then my next job from there was actually working for a software company who wrote financial software. And it was all... it was Visual Basic, but ASP was coming along, Microsoft ASP. And so people were starting to do stuff with not .NET. .NET wasn't there yet, but it was ASP. So I went to work there, and my job there was almost like, I was a developer, and they almost created the job for me. You know, I sort of came across really well in my interview, the guy said afterwards, and he didn't actually have a position for me in terms of a proper developer position, but he created the role because he just liked me and he liked how I came across. And so I ended up... And this is where I've always sort of fitted in as a sort of technical salesperson, because I can sell, clearly, because I'm doing it now, but I'm also able to talk to people. So I'm able to talk to people like they're a normal person and not understanding all the acronyms and technology, but I can also talk the technology if I need to. Things connect together, I can talk. So I end up with this technical sales role, and I'm programming demos effectively. So we take the software that we were building and doing, and I'd show how that could be linked into Outlook or linked into document management systems. And that's effectively what we were doing. That's where I met my now wife, Hannah. So she started there as a developer. And the day she joined, there's the story we remember is that the guy that I was working with shared the desk next to me, but he was on holiday. So the desk next to me was free. And the doorbell goes or whatever, and I answer it. And there's this girl at the door, and she's like, "Oh, I'm starting today." And I'm like, "Oh, come in, you know, come in and stuff." And then where can I sit? I'm like, "This desk is free." And I sort of cleared the desk, and, you know, just swept the stuff off the desk next to me. "Yeah, this is free. You can have this." And Ian, this guy, comes back sort of a week later, and he's like, "What's going on? Don't worry about it. You're over there now." But anyway, so we were working together on stuff.
Not for you.
Yeah, we were working on stuff together and doing projects together. So she was, she'd come out of Exeter University, and she's C++, you know, C programmer, and used to do artificial intelligence stuff and program printer drivers and all kinds of crazy stuff. So way, way better developer than I could ever be. So I was working with her on stuff. And then we got to a point where we started going out, and we had got to a point where she'd been there a year or so, and I'd been there 3 years by this point, and she sort of wanted to move on, and she was thinking of going contracting. So this was 1999. This was just before the millennium. And she had decided she wanted to move on. So I was thinking, I was sort of quite safe in the job. I was doing okay. I was getting paid well. I was living just down the road, across Tower Bridge, in a little rented place, a little rented flat in Bermondsey Street. And it was all very nice. So she wanted to leave. And I thought, well, I could do this. You know, I can. So we eventually basically left and started Bouncing Fish. Had the domain name for some crazy reason. Decided that would be our trading name and we'd go in together. So we just literally...
it's always the way when you have the domain name. That's
yeah, exactly.
That's why we have this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I remember we resigned on the... We'd set up all the business. We'd set up all the stuff we needed to set up. We were going for interviews. We weren't going to interviews. We decided we wanted to leave. This was it. So on the Tuesday, I sort of got the courage together to walk into my boss and say, I want to leave. And also, Hannah wants to leave. We're going to leave together. We're going to start a business. And he was fine about it, but we were right in the middle of, we'd just finished a project. So we had nothing to do effectively. We had no other project to start on yet. So he was like, well, I mean, you know, you don't have to work a month's notice if you don't want to. So he said, you can go on Friday. So we were like, awesome. So I literally, this would have been 2000. This is the start of 2000 now. So we're now in the sort of heyday of, you know, the bubble in terms of stuff happening and Google and all these things kicking off and people wanting web stuff and WAP phones at the time and all this crazy stuff was going on. So there was a lot of, you know, opportunity out there. So we'd quit on the Tuesday. I started making phone calls to agencies and we had interviews lined up with Razorfish and a company called UKCS Web, who were based just down the road from us in Putney over. So we had interviews on the Monday lined up, two interviews at these places. Went to both interviews in the Monday morning, really strange interviews. The Razorfish one was like, it was like the interviewer was actually asking us to solve a problem. It wasn't like, you know, so how would you go about doing this? It was sort of, right, here's a project and how would you do that? And it was just, afterwards we were thinking, yeah, did they actually need that problem solved by us? Or, you know, were they actually interviewing us? But anyway, we gave them all the answers and did all that. We did both interviews and we got offered both jobs in the afternoon. So it was all like, holy crap, you know. So we've got both job offers. We decided to go with the UKS Web, CKS Web, just because the Razorfish interview was so weird. And it was right over the road. You know, we could cycle to it. So we went with that one. And I remember distinctly us saying, we're going to go for it. And we hadn't signed the contract yet, but we, you know, we're going to accept the job. And basically we went to Tottenham Court Road and spent some money and bought some software and stuff that we were going to need, which was quite cool. And then the next day we started work on this project and we did 6 months working for UKCS Web, building a Microsoft portal for kids for the NSPCC, all in .NET and VB at the time. Anyway, long story short, we did that for 6 months and the way we did it when we started, we had no money. Yeah, we had nothing in the bank. But we were earning three times as much contracting than we were previously being paid. So all we did is we pulled all our money together into the business and we still paid ourselves pretty much what we were taking before, which meant we had this amount building up every month. And obviously you've got to track all the stuff like VAT and taxes and everything. But 6 months later, we had a pot of money and that was how we started the business.
But the crucial thing was you actually did that from the start, didn't you?
Yes.
The actual tracking of VAT and stuff. I didn't.
Oh, no, well, actually, well,
mess of well, all of that well, stuff well, at
no,
the beginning.
No, the first year I did screw it up. I mean, screw it up. We saved all the money up and then we did, after 6 months, we left. And the idea was we're now going to live off some of this money and if then we're back to normal jobs. What happened then was we picked up work and we started growing. It was the two of us working in the spare room. A year later, I've sort of employed somebody, the first developer we had, and a year and a bit later, we've got a couple of people. But I did screw up the first year. I did get the email from the accountant saying, right, it's time to pay your corporate tax. And I went, sorry, what? ended up, it wasn't actually much at the time. It was about 6K or something, but it was like, or it might have been 12K, but it was like, I don't have it. So I had to end up paying that over a few months and that taught me a lesson. And after that, well, I still didn't learn it, but that's another story. Anyway.
You still had accountants to start with,
yes,
though, which is
yes,
a lesson that everyone should take.
Yes, definitely.
Get an accountant. It's worth the money.
Yes.
So you will screw it up badly.
Exactly. So I went through So what happened after that, and this is a very long story, so I will cut it short, is we went from the two of us up to about 13 over the next 7 years, seven, 8 years. It was from 2000. We got up to an office in Southwark, which was costing an absolute four. It was like 40 grand. We had 13 people in there, and we were a proper business. You know, we were doing .NET development. It was all Microsoft. It was .NET. It was daily rate stuff. It was project-based work. It was websites, CMSs, big systems that we were working on. We worked on stuff like we worked on a Disney phone for kids that never ended up getting launched. I've still got the phone prototype somewhere. We were working on energy switching sites. Lots of big projects, big names. One of the things we did, we literally built a 3-month website over a weekend, working 24 hours a day with about 8 of us. And it was featured on Sky News. David Cameron used it on Sky News to switch energy providers. So lots of crazy stuff. And lots of, we built an internet access system with a company called iPass. I got on TV because we didn't employ smokers and I was into, it all got really crazy. And then 2007, the crash happened. So the crash kicks in. And at this point, I am probably doing about 20% actual coding, and the rest of it is all getting involved in invoice and selling and project management and all that crap. And I, to be honest, I was pretty much hating it at this point. I just felt like I wasn't really achieving anything. So 2006, we got married. 2007, the crash hits, and literally lost about 3 major projects, which were huge amounts of money. And I'd fallen into a really bad trap, and this is a really good bit of advice, is just don't, if your expertise is not the money, if you've gone into this starting a company because you're a programmer or you want to build stuff or you want to do this, then do that and get someone else to do the money. Get a financial controller, get an accountant, get someone who can take care of that stuff for you so that you don't make these mistakes. And the mistakes I made were that I wouldn't give that control up to people. So I was managing Sage, I was managing invoices, I was managing payments, I was managing the taxes. We had an accountant that was doing like end of year returns and everything, but I was sort of handling the day-to-day stuff, which was the wrong thing to do. And I fell into this trap of, we were hiring people, crazily hiring people when we had new projects coming in, instead of having someone that I could sit down with and I could say, right, we've got this stuff coming up, I need to hire 3 people, and that person could say, you can't, because you're not going to be able to afford to pay for the salaries or the agency fees or the tax or whatever. You just can't do that. You can have one person. That's what I needed, and I didn't have that. Because I had money in the bank, which wasn't really ours, because a lot of that money has to go to pay taxes, which you've got to realize. I would think, we had this money in the bank. It's fine. Let's go and spend money. Let's go and do this stuff. So we ended up recruiting people. We got up to 13 people. So 2007, the crash hit. Suddenly, all this money that's coming in is not coming in because these projects have been abandoned. And we owed money. We owed money in tax and all kinds of things coming up. And I was sort of on the wrong side. Now I'm on the right side, and I'll come back to that. But then I was on the wrong side. I was always chasing the money. You know, it's like a Ponzi scheme. The money that was coming in was going to be paying for the tax bill for last year, which is not how it should work. You should have that money already. You know, tip 101 tip, yeah, for running a business: you shouldn't be paying past taxes with future money coming in. That's not a good position to be in. So anyway, 2007 hits, the crash happens, we limp on for, by this time we've had our first child, and by this, yeah, so that we limped on for probably another 2 years. Slowly people started leaving, which I was happy for, and wasn't replacing them, and just downsized naturally basically as people left. It was basically just me, and at one point it was me and Hannah, but obviously she'd had the baby, so it was literally got down to being just me. So around 2008, I'm working sort of alone in a little shed in my parents-in-law's place, because we left our place in London temporarily. I was sort of jumping between the two, but we were sort of staying with them while we had the baby. And Twitter was, you know, used quite a lot. People were on Twitter and all that sort of stuff. And I got a job offer through Twitter. And it came at a time when the company was literally, I was about to bin the company because it was so bad. And so I ended up having to go to a liquidation for the company. And I got this job offer. So I then worked for an agency for 2 years or a year and a half. Yeah, 2 years in Basingstoke, which started well, but didn't end particularly well, which is another story. They had to pay me some money as a result, but anyway. But I was technical director, so I ran up the web team, which was about 3 of us. So it was really weird going back to a normal job, because I just spent literally 9 years working for myself. in a what I'd call an accidental role. You know, we never intended to be a 13-person company with an office in Southwark. It's just how things happened. Didn't really stop it from happening. And we sort of became this machine. And it's interesting because your attitude towards... I was actually grateful for what's happened, obviously, with where I am now, definitely. But I was grateful for the lesson because what it taught me was when I went back to work for a normal company again, I was seeing how they were treating me and realizing how I was potentially treating people in my business. So, you know, the simple things like when someone comes in late and you make a cheeky comment like, oh, have you wet your bed or something? You know, silly things like this that I never said that to someone, but I would get that in this new company. You know, my boss once said, oh, have you shit the bed or something? It's like, what? Why would you say that? You know, it's just a and that feeling of being watched and being, oh, what are you working on today? Yeah. And just the level of distrust. And I really opened my eyes. So I was coding. I was doing all this sort of thing. I was hands-on. But I was also managing this team of guys doing web stuff. We were doing .NET. The iPhone had come out, obviously, by this point. Objective-C was around. I looked at Objective-C and thought, I can bloody understand this at all. I did not get it. I look at it now and I can get it. But I look at it then, what the hell? I'm used to Visual Basic. This is like alien to me. And at the time, this product...
The biggest jump is the fact that you have to actually compile it.
Yes.
Like, with web stuff and like all the other things, ASP.NET, you just build it. You just type it in and save it, and then it's there.
Exactly.
Whereas with this, you compile it, and it's like, what do you mean there's errors?
Exactly.
I don't understand it.
So that's when, about 2010 is where I started getting into mobile using this product that I use called Titanium, which is this cross-platform JavaScript to native UE type stuff. And that made it easy for me to build out. So I built an app for Claritin, which was called Sneeze Alarm, which I got. I can't even remember how the job came through. I can't remember it was a sort of friend of a friend or something, and I managed to get this inquiry through from this agency that working for a bigger agency that was working for Claritin. So I got this app out, which was great, called Sneeze Alarm, and it looked up the pollen count and it would then sneeze at you and stuff like this. And it was a challenging thing to get going because at the time iOS was probably iOS 3 or 4 and Titanium was very early.
Those were the days.
Yeah, Titanium was very early days and didn't have all the support, but we managed to get this app built and it worked great. So anyway, cut a long story short, I'm playing around with this particular platform. I leave that place and I go to work for another company for a year and a half, which was a dating company running the Ruby team as a development manager. But that role was non-technical. I mean, they had other people doing that stuff. And I realized very quickly that my role was more of a personnel type role. I was the one telling people off or doing reviews or sitting in management meetings, issues with the team or something, and not actually getting, you know, my hands dirty. But on the side, I was playing around with Titanium still. And I was building some mobile apps and playing around with the code and getting into the community and helping the community and stuff like this. So anyway, year and a half later, I leave that job willingly and say, I get an offer through. This is where the freelance thing kicked in. So I get an offer. By this time, we've got three children. We're renting a place because we couldn't buy a place yet. We still had the place in London that we rented out, but we were renting a place in Wilton. And so, a lot of responsibility, a lot of money being needed. And also, I'd had the fallout from the business. So, you know, it had cost us money. We ended up having to pay about £15,000 back to the bank because of an overdraft that we had. So, you know, we'd taken a real hit with the business. Had 9 years of good stuff and then, you know, paid the price. Anyway, I get this offer for a three-month contract full-time to work on fitness apps, which was the Adrian James stuff. No guarantee of work afterwards. But it'll be doing what I want to do. So that was the opportunity. Spoke to my wife. We talked about it all. What's the worst case scenario is? You know, the worst case scenario was I was already unhappy in my job, so I would be looking anyway. So this would just be me looking in another 3 months, and I've got 3 months to plan for something. So that was it.
Worst case is you have to sell the kids.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, or some of their organs. So I've already got Bouncing Fish. Bouncing Fish was in its original form was dead, but I sort of rebooted the company and changed the name and everything. So I had this sort of company that I was using really for old clients for hosting and stuff. It wasn't much, a few thousand quid a year that was coming in. So this was it. So this was my chance. So I quit. I start work. It was probably about 2.5 days a week. I didn't have to spend a huge amount of time. It was only about a 25-hour a week commitment over the 3 months, which was nice because the money was much better. So I was working less but getting paid more. And so what I did, and this was where it all kicked off for me, is I think it was New Year's Eve 2012. So it was going to be January 1st, 2013. And my website, the Bouncing Fish website, had been one of those sort of faux, it looked like a desk, you know, skeuomorphism or whatever. So it was a desk with a coffee cup, and we had this little script that changed the coffee cup and the bagel. So there was a bagel in the morning, and then the bagel got eaten by lunchtime. It was quite nice, but cute and a bit stupid, but I liked it. And at nighttime, you know, it would go a bit dimmed down and stuff. It was all this, but basically it was all about Bouncing Fish being an agency and all this stuff. And it had been around for years, this new site. And I think I'd had two inquiries, both rubbish. So all of our business was referrals and sales and cold calling. So I went online, I got Twitter Bootstrap, I bought a $14 template for Bootstrap, and I modified it slightly, and it's still my template now. I took a cheesy photo at the time and put it in there. And the key thing I did, which if there is a lesson here, I think it's a good one, you know, it's a relevant one, is I made it all about me. So I didn't say we. I didn't say we're an agency. We do this. We do that. I did it all about me. I am. This is who I am. This is what I do. Do an about page. I kept it really simple. Homepage, about page, and a contact page. It's expanded to a few more now. But at the time, the about page had my backstory, you know, as boring or interesting as it may be. But all of these things added together. And, you know, the feedback I've got over the years is that people connect more to that stuff because it's more personal. They see similarities in my backstory with technology that I've used or the number of children I have. I even had our cat died last year, but I had a phrase on there where I said, I've got four kids and I've got a cat that thinks it's a dog and a dog that thinks it's a cat, which was true. But obviously the cat's died now. So I've changed it. But at the time, I was getting people commenting on even that line. Oh, I've also got a cat that thinks it's just crazy stuff like this that would then lead to work.
I get a lot of that with my about page where people say, it is interesting that people do read through a whole thing when it's a bit more interesting.
So the key things here were with the website, which is what's worked for me. And obviously, I'm the only test subject here in terms of my experience, is I made the website about me. And I made the website relevant as to what I do, the technologies I use, what I work with, and everything else. I didn't try and game the system. I didn't try and load it with a million keywords or have hidden text or anything like that. I just was honest and natural on there, right? Within the first week of that website going up, I had two inquiries, bizarrely. Just the search just suddenly worked, and I was getting these inquiries in. Then I started getting... So then what happened was this contract didn't renew, but I started getting this project work in. And then I was getting retainers and all kinds of stuff like this. And so things were looking... Then basically, long story short, which I know I keep saying, the opportunity that came up was... So as a very quick backstory, I'd always looked at people online on Twitter or whatever that were those people that were speaking at conferences. They had books. They seemed successful. They were getting more work than they could handle. And I was thinking, that would be so cool to be like that, you know, but I've got no chance of, you know, how do I get like that? How do I do that? The key moment was a tweet that someone tweeted, I think it was in about March or February of 2013, where they said, I've got someone who's pulled out of a talk at the mobile show we're doing. Is anyone else up for filling in? I'd never spoken at conferences. I'd never done anything like that. The most I'd ever done is a demo to a group of people, a room full of people, maybe 30 people or something like that. And so I thought, well, this is it. This is that one thing that you wanted to try and do. Obviously, I'm going to reply to this guy, and he's likely to say, okay, don't worry about it, or I've already found someone. But, you know, why not? So I replied saying, sure, I'm up for it. 2 months later, I'm then at the Dutch Mobile Conference doing a talk on mobile development and cross-platform and stuff. And then that kicked off a whole series of other things because the nature...
Small wars.
Yeah, because the nature of this business is that people look at... conferences, they look at speakers, they look at agendas because they're going to be running one and they look at a previous one and think, oh, maybe we get that guy or maybe that girl or whatever. So you end up getting on that circuit. And so that led to a load of conferences. It led to me being known more in the community and stuff like that. Then I get an approach by a publishing company saying, do you want to write a book? Which then took a couple of years. But again, all of these things add up. And suddenly, you know, I don't want to say that whole brand awareness thing, but it is like that. You know, your name is being banded about. Your image is being seen, your details are being seen. And then I got asked to speak at the London App Show and all this crazy stuff. But it essentially led to a situation now where, like you, I get really inundated weekly. I've had an inquiry and while we've been on this call, I get probably about 10 or 15 inquiries a week now through the website. And you get the normal ones that are 2K budget or a 500 quid. But I go now back. I go back to people now with a sort of standard email that just sort of says, "This is my typical range. This is process, etc." If you're interested in talking, let's talk, and then that eliminates those. But I'm in exactly the same position as you. I am, and you know, you're the sort of person as well. I remember when I first followed you on Twitter, you know, I think at the time I wasn't, you know, fully freelance. And if I was, it was the early days. And I remember seeing what you were doing and thinking, God, you know, I want to do stuff like that, you know, the gadget show thing, and thinking, I really want to, you know, that's what I'd like to be doing. And it's just all of these
unpaid work.
Yeah. I want to do unpaid work. all of these bits of the jigsaw come together. I don't really have like a secret formula for any. I can only explain what's happened to me. I guess you're the same. There's little tips we've learned along the way with things like money and stuff like
there,
that.
There is a secret formula. The secret formula is to have a website and to fill it with work.
Yes, exactly.
Whether or not that is work you've done for other people or work you've been paid for, doesn't matter. As long as you've got a web page which shows that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the other thing around that is also you've got to be willing to boost yourself. You've got to be willing to not bullshit, but you've got to be willing to bend the truth a little bit. You know, if you've worked on something for a big client that you did a small part of something on that application, you've got to stick that client logo on the website and stick what you did about that app and the background of that app on the website, because it's still relevant and people still come to a website and go, oh, he's only worked for, you know, four shops in his local area. Whereas they see something like Three or BBC or ITV or whatever it is and think, oh, okay, you know. And it's still as fickle as that. People can be as fickle as that, you know.
It's like right now I'm on Jason's website and I see he's got prominently on the front page there Great British Bee Count, which is an app I've been building for the last 2 years. Yes. He's not worked on it for ages.
I know, exactly. But that still gets people talking about it. And yep. You've got to be willing to bullshit a little bit. Bend the truth, as I like to call it. So I'm in the same situation. I get inundated with work and I'm very lucky to be, and I can inflate prices a little bit with certain projects where I might not be that keen to do them or there's a rush, because I'm not that bothered if I don't get it. You know, I'm not desperate for work. And so it's always funny when I get the emails saying, where people found me on, I get the SEO emails where they found me on the online, but they don't think I'm prominently featured. And it's always interesting to think, well, how the hell did you find me? And the one takeaway I would say, other than being selfless self-promoter, this is always a good thing to do. With the money side, the lesson I learned with the new business is saving. And that's what I do now. So we talked about this before, but whenever I get invoices in, I just stick half in the bank, more if I can. And I say bank, I mean my savings account. So I've got the current account and the savings account, and I just stick a big chunk, and I have very, very little in the company current account, and I just try and put as much as possible in the savings account. Because now I'm in a position where every year I've got to the point where I don't have that, what I used to have, that gut-wrenching feeling where my accountant confirms or even comes out of the blue because I didn't bother checking, and says, this is what the corporate tax is going to be, and my guts would literally fall away, and I'd be thinking, Christ. And I just don't get that now, because I've got that money in the bank, and I just finished my last financial year at the end of April, and I've already done a rough sort of report, which, you know, it's not super accurate, but you can get a rough idea of revenue and taxes, and I've got more than that money in the savings account, so I'm going to be able to pay that with loads to spare, which is always a nice position to be in. So, you know, don't let yourself get into that trap with money. Use a good system to track everything, get a good accountant and stay on top of it. And that's probably the main lesson, because everything else, if you're any good at what you do and you stick it on and you've got a good website, talks about what you do in an honest way, features some of your work, even if it's old, then, you know, and take opportunities, like you did with the gadget show. You know, it's very rare for this stuff to come along. And so if someone comes along and says, can you do this for this? You've just got to take the opportunities. You know, speak in front of an audience, write a book, do some blog posts, do a podcast. You know, I wouldn't have thought I'd have been doing this last year. You know, whether this leads to anything or not is something else. But it's enjoyable, it's fun, it's, you know, it's interesting, and it helps sort of spread your name out there.
It's going to lead to one thing right now, because while I've been on your website, I've noticed that your speaking page has a typo.
Oh god. So. There'll be loads of...
Get that fixed for you.
There'll be loads of typos.
Your little intercom thing popped up and said, I'm happy to speak at an even, you might be running.
Oh, no, you mean... Oh, it's on the intercom thing. Okay. Yeah, I need to play around with that. That's actually an interesting thing, because I get a lot of work through that. And when it doesn't work, I've noticed when there's been a fault or something's not, that they had some issues with it where it wasn't popping up. It's actually really interesting. People do engage you through that. It can lead to work. The other thing I'd say is, again, this is part of the sort of self-promoter type thing, is LinkedIn. You know, LinkedIn gets a bad name. Gets taken the piss out of a lot. I've actually got some big contracts and big work, a big amount of work and of large value through LinkedIn. And I ended up spending, I think I spend like 400 quid a year on my account for LinkedIn, because I'm paying for the sort of, I think it's like the job seeker or something account. But what it actually does is it boosts your position in the search results. So I actually get a lot of activity on LinkedIn, and I've had some, and I pay that because I'm well up. You know, I did a year and a half contract on very good money based on an inquiry that came through a LinkedIn message. So I am more than up in terms of the, but yeah, again, it just comes down.
I'd be interested to talk about that in another episode.
No, definitely.
I don't use LinkedIn at all. I hate it.
Oh, it's full of a lot of crap.
Years and years and years ago.
It's full of a lot of crap.
Oh yeah, loads.
But it's one, it's like the emails. It's just spreading your information out there. And all of these things end up connecting together so that you end up, you know, like the London app conference that I spoke there, they came to me, that came via LinkedIn. And that was because she'd seen an article in a magazine that I was contributing to, where I was just contributing a little column every month. And she'd seen, it was Disrupt magazine. And she saw that and had said, oh, you know, I've seen your name around. I don't know if that's good or bad. But that's how that came about. And so it's just about spreading, you know, spreading your knowledge, spreading your name, getting yourself known out there, and hopefully getting in a position where you can be turning away work rather than chasing it.
Absolutely.
It's probably a good time to finish, I guess.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I need to... Ironically, I'm working on the third version I've been working on of the Great British Beacon.
Oh, really? So, cool.
But yeah, another year where it's not on your site.
I might have to take it off. I might have to take it off at some point then.
Yeah, I've done three updates now. So
cool.
No, you can leave it. I don't mind.
I'll let you get on with it then.